It's time for Windows Weekly. Guess what? We got whiskey because Richard Campbell's in studio. We'll talk about this fine bottle of brown liquor plus AI, Copilot, antitrust, and Windows 24 H2. Yep, Windows Weekly is next.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Richard Campbell, episode 875, recorded Wednesday, April 3rd, 2024. A lot of Neil Diamond. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Microsoft. Something's a little strange about this episode. I don't know what it could possibly be, except I do know there's a bottle of whiskey next to me. Here he is appearing in our studio, Richard Campbell from Run As Radio.
Yes.
You're in town.
I am. I was in Vegas last week, as you know, and I had to come to NorCal for a few things. You kind of made sad noises last week about, you know, you're going to be in NorCal.
I begged. So. I did.
You didn't. You just made sad noises. I talked to She Who Must Be Obeyed and said, I think I'm going to have to spend the day on Wednesday. Take a little drive. And I've never been in this studio before, so it's really great to be here.
Well, thank your better half for letting you be here.
I don't know why she puts up with me, honestly.
I'm so glad you're here.
I ask yours the same thing, too, right?
Yeah, I don't know why she puts up with
crazy,
me.
It's crazy. But it's great to be up here, see everybody in person. And I brought a bottle of whiskey with me. I know you'd be shocked.
Oh.
And it seems like every time I come to your studio, I bring some whiskey.
Oh, I don't have to drive. You do.
And I do, for a change, right? Last time I didn't, but now.
Now, you know who's very sad now? Mr. Paul Thurrott, who is still in Mukunji. You could have flown out, Paul, but no. Hi, Paul.
I didn't know we were doing a get-together.
I didn't either. So I'm really pleased. It's good. Thank you for coming out.
I could find something to drink if I had to.
Yeah, please do. Paul is, of course, the man in charge at Thurrott.com, and his books are at leanpub.com. And together, Mr. P and Mr. T do the thing that they do so well, which is talk about Microsoft. And today, I think we should just throw everybody a curveball and talk about Windows.
Weird.
What do you say, guys?
Yep. We can talk about the future of Windows 11 and Windows 10 today.
Wow. So what is the, is there, I mean, at some point, Windows 10 in 2025 is out of support, right?
Right.
So, I mean, at some point in the next year, they got to say.
Well, except that Microsoft has that extended security updates program, right? Like they had for Windows 7. So
I was looking at the, now this is admittedly from last year, but at the, market share of Windows 11 and Windows 10, and Windows 11 is still way behind Windows 10.
Yeah.
In fact, it's not clear why, ahead of Macintosh.
Right? I mean,
Mac's 14.
All right, let's settle down. Settle down. well, I mean, obviously, part of it is the artificial hardware requirement constraint. You know, part of it is businesses that don't tend to want to move on to something new and different.
Well, especially when it gives them nothing, right? Like, there was no. Any enterprise that I talk to is like, we're on 10 because there's nothing in 11 that matters to us. So, for a long time, I was giving up a bunch to move to 11. Like, group policy was not lined up. So, any set of managed machines going to 11 was really problematic. That's largely resolved now, but doesn't mean they're in a hurry until this April 2025 deadline came along.
Well, at some point, I mean, right now, what is it? Windows 11 is hovering somewhere around 25% of market share, and Windows 10 is somewhere around 70% of market share. Mm. So it's got a ways to go.
Yeah, but we see this, right? It's this happened with XP. It happened with Windows 7.
By the way, that's where the other 5% is. Windows 7, Windows 8.
No, I mean
Windows
back
XP
in the day. Back in the day,
and Windows 8. This is according to StatCounter.
These are the only two supported versions of Windows now. So it's the silver lining here is that Windows 11 is built on top of Windows 10. It's not a dramatic move sideways or up or anything like that. So customers that stay on Windows 10. Receive most of the same benefits, around security.
What is Enterprise telegraphing to you? Are they knowing they have a year? Are they going to go with extended support or are they going to upgrade?
No, well, they were waiting for the final pricing, which just actually come out. And at $60 a machine for the first year,
yikes,
that's enough to put a fair bit of pressure on a move. Remember when Windows 10 was...
And it doubles year two, so there's your time frame.
It's going to keep going up. And a year's enough time. And most of the benchmarks have been done now. Like, we kind of know where we're at. It's literally... It was April. Now they're saying October is the end of support.
Okay.
It is October. That's right. Yeah, next year. Yep.
So that's enough time, but you have to move, right? That is a budget cycle. So wherever your budget cycle happens to be for your organization, you're like, okay, we got to do this thing. There's going to be some hardware changes, which happens anyway. And you're going to deal with all of that. But nobody's in a hurry. And arguably, that deadline shifted once already. They told us it was April 2025. Now it's October. Maybe it'll be April 2026 next.
Yeah.
I could think of certain Microsoft customers that if they said, we're not going to move and we're not going to pay this, they might adjust their numbers.
Hmm. I don't know. Well, I don't know. I've always been like the future of Windows Today guy. So, when Windows 11 was announced, I switched to that immediately. I started working on the book. And this is a little off or out of order for the show notes, but I last week pulled out an old Surface Book 2, blew it away, went back to Windows 10 just to sort of see if there was going to be any pulling of the heartstrings or anything there.
Why would you go backwards? Is this just an experiment?
Just on the one. I have 21 computers here. Who cares? It's just one computer. But I just wanted to see what that was like again. Right? Yeah. It's been a while. I also looked at my old book, the Windows 10 Field Guide. When was the last time I updated that? And that was almost 3 years ago. In fact, it was tied right to the release of the announcement of Windows 11. The little asterisk caveat there or whatever is that the subsequent releases of Windows 10 introduced no new features, right? Or inconsequential new features. And so the only things that have really changed in Windows 10 from an end user perspective are that some apps were updated to versions that match what we see in Windows 11, like the Photos app and the Store app, actually. Microsoft Edge gets updated every 4 weeks, so that's kind of consistent across platforms. And then Copilot is happening, although I'm not seeing Copilot on this computer, and I've kind of gone back and looked at what they said about that, and that seems to be on its own little rolling rollout or whatever, so I don't know. But I don't know. As a user, I'm not an enterprise, but there are some things in Windows 10 I kind of miss, and most of it is just related to a lack of escalated insurification. Although, to be fair, that did start with Windows 10. It just escalated horribly in Windows 11, and it's gotten much worse in recent years. I miss the File Explorer app. We're going to talk about that.
The one that just works? That weird one?
The one that actually works, yeah. Works. It's not covered in a bunch of crap that doesn't matter and doesn't slow it down, which is kind of nice. I like that. I really don't like the Settings app. The Windows 11 Settings app is much more logical and easy to use. So it's kind of hit or miss. I did get a OneDrive harassment notification, which I thought was amusing. And then I had it silently turn on OneDrive folder backup, which I found less than amusing.
Yeah.
Just like it does in Windows 11.
So that's a consistent behavior, at least.
Yeah, you get a little credit for that, I guess. But we're getting to the point now where I don't want to be this guy. Like, I don't want to be the guy where all my tips are how to make Windows not work like Windows because Microsoft can't seem to get it right. I wish it wasn't like that. But here we are. So I don't know. I mean, just from a user, or what do you call it? Like a user experience aesthetic kind of standpoint, Windows 11 is subjectively prettier, I guess, it's not as old fashioned. Windows 10 was built at a time when maybe Windows Phone was still going to make sense. Oh, just kidding. And, far too late. They've still got this squared off live tiles based UI that, has looked archaic.
Yeah, but I can put my taskbar on the left side of my giant wide screen,
That's right.
I really
like
that.
Put it on the top. You can make it small.
Yeah.
There's all these fun little things that we kind of miss. I will say, if you had to pick one major complaint, like one really specific complaint when Windows 11 was released, I think we would all agree it was the, you right-click the taskbar, and not only was Task Manager not there as an option, but there were no options. There was nothing there. Like, there was...
the only thing there was a dialogue that said, don't click right-click again.
Yeah, don't right-click. Well, you could do taskbar settings. In the initial release of Windows 11, that was, there was one choice. And now, I will say, years later now, 2.5 years later, whatever it is, I right-click on the taskbar on Windows 10, and I think, oof,
Look at all that stuff there.
Yeah. Way too much stuff. And it's stuff that is so esoteric and unnecessary to most people, right? I know everyone has their little pet feature they love, but I don't know. It was an interesting exercise. I'll keep it going. I want to see if
I got to tell you, I'm still not in love with Win11's tendency when you right-click on a file to create little icons either on the top or the bottom and hide the main things that you want to do in those icons you can't identify.
Like, when you simplify a user interface, by nature, you have to get rid of things. So you're going to hide features that people, you know, want. The thing you're describing is, I think, the ugliest and stupidest design decision that they made, which was, is that some of the more common features that you would access from right-click, like copy, paste, rename, etc., they don't have the names on them. They're just little icons. So it's like looking at a Egyptian hieroglyphics, and
but only if the stuff that you care about. You know, they're very specific.
Yeah,
about
I mean,
the ones that people care about and move them.
Yeah, so I don't. This could still happen, I guess, in time for 24H2. But for a little while there, they were testing putting the labels back, right? Yeah. You know, just
that'd be
common
sense. You know, this, you're in this place now where you get two versions out of each feature idea: the version where you put it in, and the version where you take it back out again.
I since you mentioned this feature, I feel compelled to also mention that when you right-click on the desktop or anything on the desktop, actually, it's probably true of anything you right-click, but let's just use the desktop as the obvious example. Those icons that you're talking about, the ones that are just icons without labels, will appear on the top or the bottom, depending on where you click on the screen. Mm-hmm. And this is just one of those misguided, we're trying to be helpful notions, but what they were trying to do was make it less of a distance to travel with the mouse cursor.
Right.
You know, because the ones you need the most should be the closest to the mouse cursor. And you, without knowing anything about UI, you might think, oh, that makes sense. That doesn't make any sense.
That's not where people's eyes go.
Right. We build up this muscle memory about where things are. So, I mean, we start, before you even see the icon, you start clicking and then you've clicked on the wrong thing because now it's on a different, you don't move UI. It's not a game of chance, you know, like it's this, the consistency actually matters too. So anyway,
they missed the April Fool's Day version where when you move to the one on the bottom, it didn't flip up to the top. Like that'd be ours.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It's like, wasn't that on the bottom before? What's happening here? Yeah, no, it's weird.
Yeah.
So, I just realized, oh, we've moved things around. I see. I'm like, speaking of moving things around, like my notes are in a different order.
I reorganized them to reflect actual order of the.
That's cool. So. I was looking at that and I'm thinking, going crazy?
I am on top of things. By the way, I
was
very,
just describing.
Very pleased to see that the lady running across the beach is still running across the beach on the desktop.
This was pre-Me Too because the latest version has that movie executive running behind her.
You say it's like riding a bike. Back to the good old days.
Yeah.
Don't stick your foot in the front wheel.
Yeah. Or anything else for that matter.
Right.
Yeah.
I'll leave it Windows 10 at this. I get it. I get why people, not businesses, but people would stay with this. Like, I get it.
Yeah.
Obviously, I understand why businesses would stick with it. For me personally, and this, I books and blah, 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 whatever, but I do prefer, for all the ugly little things and whatever problems I have with Windows 11, I guess I still do prefer it to Windows 10.
But just from a day-to-day. You did the right thing to be sure. You went back and had that experience.
I waited longer than I should have, honestly. Yeah. But I did, yeah. So I'll keep it going. You know, I mean, I'm not going to use it every single day, but I've actually been using it since I did this. I don't know, foolishly expecting something to change. I don't know what I'm thinking is going to happen.
I mean, the next story here is what's the upgrade experience from Windows 10 to 11 now? Because you did that so early on. Plus, you're prone to paving machines anyway. So, going through an upgrade cycle is interesting.
Yep. I wish you could, on a physical machine, do what you can do on a virtual machine, which is just kind of set a checkpoint and say, I'm going to upgrade this thing, and then I'm going to just go back,
yeah.
You know, just to see what that looks like. But it's, yeah. We'll see.
The funny thing is, I know.
Well, there was a, remember.
The machine can do that, last right? Week. Like, have you ever done a P to V, the physical to virtual conversion of a, typically only do this with servers. Yeah, yeah. But it literally kicks the server continues to run, and any changes that are happening on the file system are literally logged.
Right.
While they synchronize a copy up to the virtual machine, and then they catch it up and then move it. Like, it just speaks,
I don't know
to
if this
you
was,
could do this.
Yeah. This may have come out of your conversation with Jeff Woolsey a month or so ago, but I'm delighted that Microsoft is paying more attention to Hyper-V again.
Yeah.
You know, which I think is sorely needed. But I for whatever issues Hyper-V may have, one of the great joys of this product is that revert to checkpoint, the thing is and it comes right back. I mean, it's so quick, and it'd be neat if you could just do that right on the device or whatever. But
we could be saving a lot of users a lot of grief by isolating software in pseudo virtual machines so that they're not cross-contaminating each other.
And you mean like XP compatibility mode?
Do we talk
more like sandboxes last week? So this was the plan for Windows 10X, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is arguably the architecture of modern Xbox consoles, a Hyper-V based situation. And I think we were talking, I think it was us in last week, and we were talking about maybe bringing these like an Xbox OS down to like a portable gaming PC and running that instead of Windows. And this notion of, if they just architected Windows right, I mean, this could work great. They have it there. It's all there, right? You know, it just isn't available, I guess. I don't know.
I just have this sense that there's going to be a big push on the consumer side of Windows in the immediate future, and it's going to be more the AI-centric thing. Like, this whole move with the DeepMind guys is, I think, Satch is saying, I'm not happy with what we're doing consumer. Let's try some new people. I just hope they drag Windows into that. It's a shot.
And that's how you get people to upgrade. You give them a feature compelling.
That's compelling.
Yeah. So there were a million thoughts to that. I've been struggling to come out with this article I've been writing about that is about this topic, essentially. And the idea here is that AI is like personal computing accelerated, right? You know, we've gone through these phases in time, the GUI, the internet, you know, mobile, web, blah, 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 whatever. And we're barely 14 months into this AI thing, you know, that Microsoft touched off, right? With what was called Bing Chat at the time. And I feel like we're kind of entering the third phase already. It's so weird. But it's in that phase is that hybrid phase, right? Where we offload everything from the cloud and try to do as much as possible locally. But the issue there is tied to the issue with AI and selling AI right now, which is that there's just no compelling experience to show people that would make them want to bother. I don't know that we are ever going to be able to convince individuals to buy a new computer because of some cool new feature. I just don't.
To the cloud.
No. Mm.
To the cloud. Wasn't that the consumer pitch? And the whole desk turned around and she went to the cloud.
I don't know
how that was compelling to consumers, where I think the game side is compelling.
Gaming?
I think the productivity piece, getting on the internet, you know, remember the old version of Windows and how much clunking you had to do to get onto a dial-up system? So, I mean,
that was a while ago.
The people you're asking that just looked up from their phone and they said, what are you talking about?
The internet?
I don't remember that.
But, you know, we are having this conversation about what if the screen was just the output device and you're mostly talking to a very good chat bot that's also using the cameras to look at you and measure your frustration level and where you're gesturing. You know, really a big rethink of UX. Like, what if there were no more buttons? Like, you're just not doing that anymore.
I have such a high frustration level, I would just never stop setting off alarms, and that system would have to shut itself down.
It's the co-pilot button.
Yes.
You know, one keyboard with one big button.
Yeah.
Just, you know, mash it, and then you tell your computer what you want, and you say, please make a Spotify playlist.
he basically said that in October. He was talking about this notion. He was speaking somewhat metaphorically, perhaps, but this idea that Copilot was the new start button, this new start menu, yeah. You know, that the center of this orchestration that occurs on your PC.
And, you know, we've tried this before. People don't want to talk to their PCs. That's why Cortana failed.
They don't.
They
yeah.
don't
people
want to
don't
talk.
Even want well, you to move the start button or, God help you, yeah. remove the start button.
And in an office, know? It's even worse because no one wants to sit there with their coworkers yes. sitting around them going, we're having a nice chat with
talking to a piece of technology is fine as long as it does what you say. As soon as you have to say the same thing twice, you never want to talk
so
to it.
So annoying.
Again.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's the end of it.
Yeah.
Which has always been the experience. Arguing, yep. talking to Siri is fine. Arguing with Siri makes you look stupid.
Right. And if you have kids in the car and you're talking to Siri, guarantee you they're going to oh, yeah. they're going to say
they're going to start adding things to it
and play the poop song. And then you're dead. It's over.
Yeah. The Siri experience was perfectly portrayed in an early ad by Apple where that Zoe Deschanel woman, whatever her name is, was standing in a window looking outside. It's pouring outside. And she picks up her iPhone 4 and she goes, "Hey, Siri, is it raining?" I'm like, you know, this is
Zoe.
Everything
Zoe,
you need to know about the Apple
the
ecosystem. It is perfect. Perfect.
That was 4S era.
Yeah, 4S.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Well, you know, I'm going down the path of the voice interface to the house bit by bit, and she who must be obeyed will issue any given command once. If it does not function the first time, it's broken. And she'll do something else.
Yeah. Here you go. Yeah, here's our good friend.
That rain.
Yes. What the f*** do you think that is?
Oh. Let's get tomato soup delivered.
That's the better version.
How cute and quirky of you. Now, go f*** yourself.
Good. Because I don't want to put on real shoes.
Oh, my God.
Remind
That's
me
beautiful.
To clean up tomorrow.
You are such a lazy
Excellent. Today, we're dancing. Play,
oh
shake,
my
round,
God.
And roll.
That's,
you are a really
that's astonishing.
I don't know where that came from or who did it, but
I don't think that's the original.
I don't think that's the original. What it reminds, we will bloop it, right, Kevin? Yes. Apologies like to the live listeners.
You the spoof ad words. Like the girl in the back lawn, and she's like, "What's a computer?" And the guy standing there with a hose, he's like, "Ask your mother. She knows what a computer is." You know, it's just... these insipid... anyway, I don't know. We got off of the sidetrack there. But anywho, I forgot where I was.
I know where you are because I have the multiple sources have revealed a staggered release schedule.
So
it's right there. There's your head next to it. Here. And there's Richard's head next to it.
Wow.
That's so cool how your heads pop up. Okay, go ahead.
I'm easily amused, apparently. Tell us about 24H2.
Yeah, so I've heard this now from a couple people. Zach Bowden's been writing about this. Actually, since I wrote this article, he's written something else. It doesn't, I can't say expands on this per se, but kind of reiterates this, that for all the weirdness around Windows 11 updating over the past 2 years, let's say, it's going to get weirder this year. And
that's hard to imagine.
I know. Well, you decide. There are probably reasons for it that are tied to their OEM partners and their chip silicon maker partners, whatever. But there is every indication that Microsoft is about to RTM, if you will. They don't use that term, but finalize what will be the initial release of 24H2. It's going to ship basically in April or be finalized in April. And we'll start shipping on new Qualcomm-based computers in May or June. And then they're going to keep working on it. And October's going to come around. And there'll be more new features to add. And they'll release an update to 24H2. And then it will go out to the rest of the world on other computers, apparently. That last part, I'm not 100% sure of the notion that everyone won't be able to get it immediately. I don't quite understand what the point of that is. But you may recall that 22H2 and 23H2 are the same, right?
Yeah.
In every way imaginable, except for that one number. And maybe this is the grand consolidation, and it will come early, perhaps, to everybody, but if not, certainly to Qualcomm users. And
it's surprising to go ARM first, like where you probably have the most problems because you're still just getting fit and finish around the CPU design. Like that surprises me.
I think it's really interesting to see Qualcomm saying, "Oh, we're going to be faster than Intel Ultra. We're going to be better. It's like, doesn't that put some pressure on Microsoft?
Even a, you know, even a child learns not to brag after they've been proven wrong so many times. But that,
you know,
that
I believe
part
them.
Of what.
What if they're right?
Yeah. Well,
I believe them too. I do. I mean, and we are longtime victims of the Core i5 performance level promise of 3 years ago, whenever that was. But we've seen too many benchmarks. There's just been too much information from the outside that has. We saw Google release Chrome. Why would they do that?
Yeah,
this is not a company that takes a bet. Bets the on Chrome the PC ever.
Yeah, ever.
Is that them saying we think that's the future of Windows?
I mean, I don't want to read too much into it, but this is a platform that has so little share. Now it has no share, basically. Mm-hmm. And for anyone to release software on that platform is very interesting to me. So a company, look, you know, like Stardock is releasing versions of their apps for in native ARM form. Okay, that's a small little company that does Windows software, right?
Yeah.
Google is not that kind of company at all. I mean,
this might be just a straight triage. Like, how is the thing written? Because it's mostly in C.
It's pretty portable.
You're just changing the underlying libraries. It's not that tough to do.
Yeah.
Arguably, if you're working in C#, because the CLR will take care of it for you, not that difficult to do either. So, you know, you do a triage, run down and say, who are the easy ones? Let's pick a couple and see what happens. Yeah.
But again, because it's Google, easy to do is not even the issue. Like, they just wouldn't do
it. It's a business. So, that's a strategic business decision, not a programmer decision. Yeah. Right?
Yeah. Do you think that was tit for tat kind of thing? They swapped off?
I don't know. I honestly think they may be reading the tea leaves and saying, look what Apple's done with their M.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Anyone who's used an M whatever based Mac has come away with the same. You couldn't find. Now, someone's going to raise their hand in the back of the room and seriously go seek help. But you couldn't find an individual who used one of these things. It wasn't blown away.
Yeah.
It's not just okay. No, it's dramatically.
It's the best computer currently made. And I am not an Apple fan. Don't use Apple hardware, but you cannot deny how good an
error is. No, it's incredible.
So somebody at Microsoft nudged Google and said,
No one has that influence at Google. Yeah. No one.
That's why I was thinking with the tit for tat. It's like somebody owed somebody something. And it's just like, you know what you could do? Take a look at this.
Yeah.
But
I don't know.
Does Microsoft want Windows on ARM to be the future of Windows?
I know on the server side in Azure, it's a big deal.
And there's a good reason for it.
Because of density.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they get more compute resource for that. Certainly it. And it sort of ties back to the Google thing, which is, are you getting tired of your Intel dependency and you want to have choices, right? I mean, that's why they originally shipped ARM for WinRT, was that they were so frustrated with Intel. So,
well, it's also why Apple made the switch, frankly.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's also because of basically iPhone, iPad, we'll call it Apple envy. I mean, Windows RT was born in a world in which the iPad had just been released. Right. Apple had this great story, fanless, super thin devices, no sound. And Windows was this archaic thing from the past. And Microsoft has invested so much time and so many billions of dollars, first in RT and then Windows and ARM. And then Windows and ARM in particular, just the progression of this thing, the evolution of it, incredible. They've sold none of these devices. Yeah. I mean, you don't just keep going. You know, if this wasn't going to work or didn't make sense, they would have given up on this years ago.
Kev in the chat made the point, Google just wants the data. And that's legit. That's a very simple, straightforward Occam's razor kind of solution. It's like, just in case it takes off this time, make sure your default browser is Chrome.
Oh, I mean, in the short term, the market for that data is going to be pretty small. But sure. I mean, I believe as much as I can believe without having an exact answer that this is the real deal. And then now we'll see. It would be horrific for anyone who's a Windows or a Microsoft enthusiast to have this thing wither on the vine after it comes out and is actually pretty damn good, But I think PC makers want this stuff too, right? For all the same reasons. They want to ship fanless devices, 18 hours of battery life, or whatever the number is. And of course, everyone wants the same thing, right? And
we were just having this conversation about why would someone buy a new machine?
Why would they upgrade? That's one reason.
And so thinner, longer battery life, quieter, cooler.
And AI.
Yeah.
And it does AI better, right? Because it's got the NPU.
Yeah. It's just a question is, what do you call an AI at that point, right? Is it just that my background blurring is excellent?
Is it a problem for Microsoft if Windows and ARM starts to become dominant? Or do they want this?
No,
or do
I
they
think not? There's no
for
downside.
Microsoft?
Yeah.
No, there's no downside.
Yeah. They want.
Oh, if anything. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
They want the endpoint, right? Endpoint's where the money is. So it's where the customer is. The more endpoints they have, the better.
This is a lot of the things that Microsoft has done, and a lot of the things that they've been successful at have worked to prolong the lifetime of a platform or whatever it might be, right? Like, you know, the Office Ribbon set up that productivity suite for the next decade or whatever, right? Office 365 had a similar effect. You know, Windows, we haven't had one of those in a while. And you know, between mobile and web and all the stuff that's happening, I mean, there's been kind of a decline, I would say, over the past many years. But this is a way you can extend the useful lifetime of the platform, right? It makes it more viable. It makes it more interesting. And like you guys said, I mean, it makes it more likely that someone might say, okay, actually, there's the thing that would get me to buy a new computer. Mm-hmm. It works more like my iPad or whatever. And I don't mean functionally like Windows 8. I mean, it's silent and you forget about the battery so much you don't even think to charge it all the time.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful world to be in.
Yeah, it's not a bad thing. And you can't tell me Intel's going to get you there. You know?
I can tell you, I can be pretty confident that they will not.
Pat Gelsinger begs to disagree.
He really wants it to not be true. Yeah, really wants it.
But Intel's hedging its bets, saying, "But we can make ARM chips. Don't think we can't. Mm-hmm. We can do that."
So we're Intel's going to come up,
right?
I got to tell you though, this is Intel has become the Eddie Haskell of the technology world. I don't think you can believe anything they say anymore. You know, and I feel bad for them, right? I mean, Microsoft and Intel, obviously, you know, we have a term for this, Wintel, right? But they came up in the world together. They dominated the PC space together.
It was a tense relationship, wasn't it?
Yeah.
They deserve each other. But the Microsoft, by and large, not so much Windows, but most of the rest of the company made this transition to the cloud, and now they're trying to do the same thing for AI successfully. And Intel did not, they got left behind. You know, the bus took off, and Intel was standing there with its lunchbox going, where did everybody go? You know, and they made, like all companies that fail, sometimes it's exterior forces, but more often it's a combination of that and strategic mistakes. And Intel, I mean, Microsoft begged them for decades, stop going up, go down, please. You know, the industry needs this. And they were like, gaming PCs and power, you know, premium computers and whatever. And it's like, that is, boy.
Well, that's what our Anthony Nielsen's saying. Don't thousands of CUDA cores and a GPU trump a few NPU cores? But that's not the point. There's a thin slice of people who want all that power, and they'll still make those. I'm not saying they'll stop like Apple did. But
no, this is about going after the mainstream.
There's a big market for thin, light, long battery power
PCs. Yeah, oh my God, yes.
Yeah.
And look, Microsoft has been worried about Apple and the Mac since Mac OS X, and I mean, realistically speaking, you could kind of point to any era of the past 20 years and say they didn't really move the needle that much. Even the release of Apple Silicon didn't at first move the needle. Mm-hmm. But my God, you know, once you overcome that inertia, I we're going to move into a much more heterogeneous space in the PC world than has ever been the case before. Until you'd have to go back to Commodore, Atari, and TI and all those computers, you know, the 8-bit computers. Yeah. I mean, it hasn't been like that for a long, long time.
I'm also noticing that Microsoft, and I think I'm jumping ahead and stealing a little thunder into your later section here. Microsoft's getting very confident about giving you the latest version of all of their AI tools and you know, making more stuff free. Certainly at the Fabric conference, we saw a lot of conversation about the small language models. Like they aren't afraid of burying their cloud anymore, where they seem to be edgier, you know, 9 months ago, but that they believe more work's going to be done on the edge and they're going to be part of it. And that would include these new devices would be good at that.
Let me take a little break before we go on, because in a weird synchronicity, before you talk about Windows Canary builds, I want to talk about the Thinkst Canary. How about that?
How did this happen?
It's meant to be, I think. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by Thinkst Canary. The Thinks Canary is awesome. We have them, and you should have them too. Any business, any company. You know, what the problem is, people say, well, our perimeter is well protected. Well, you know how that works out, you know. AT&T said, our perimeter is well protected. The problem is, assuming that you are impermeable is problematic once somebody gets in. Then you have no way of knowing what they're doing in there, unless you have a Thinkst Canary, or two, or three, or 100. Thinks Canaries are honeypots, but not, you know, not hard to deploy. You can deploy them in minutes, and you can make them look like anything. You can make them look like a NAS, a SCADA device. You can make them look like an IIS server, an old one, a new one, XP server, Windows 11 server, Linux server. You could turn all the lights on and, you know, make it a Christmas tree of services, or you can just narrow it down to the key ones that hackers love, like port 139. Turn that on, baby, and see what happens. You can also make lure files, which you can spread around, PDFs, XLS, DocX files, that look super valuable. You know, maybe like a spreadsheet that says payroll information, except it's not. As soon as a bad guy hits the canary, tries to hit those lure files, tries to brute force your fake internal SSH server, your Thinks Canary goes, hey, it lets you know you got a problem. And no false alerts, just the alerts that matter. Choose a profile for your device. Register it with the hosted console for monitoring and notifications. By the way, notifications, email, text, syslog, console-based. They support webhooks. You get to get it on Slack any way you want. So that's the nice thing. You know, those notifications come in. There, we've had Thinks Canaries running for years and only got a notification once when it really mattered, when there was somebody probing our ports inside the network. You wait. Attackers who breach your network, malicious insiders, any adversary. By the way, yeah, insiders. The what is it called? The rogue maid? The filthy maid? What do they call it?
The disgruntled employee.
Disgruntled employee maid. Somebody in the network already. And they'll hit the Thinks Canary. Don't tell them about it, by the way. You just keep it to yourself. But when they hit it, you will know. All right, let me give you the deets, the specifics. Canary.tools/twit, canary.tools/twit. Let's say you want 5, which is a small number. Banks might have hundreds. Back-end casino operations might have thousands. But let's say you want 5. That's $7,500 a year. You get 5 Thinks Canaries. You get your own hosted console. You get the upgrades. You get the support. You get the maintenance. If you use the code TWIT in the How Did You Hear About Us box, you're going to cut 10% off that price forever, for life. And here's the best part. You can always, if you're at all skeptical, can return them for a full money-back guarantee anytime in the first 2 months. That's 60 days to try it out. I have to tell you, though, in all the years we've been talking about Thinks Canaries, not one person has asked for that refund. Not one. That's amazing. It's because they really work. They do what they say, and you're going to need it and love it, and you won't want to live without it. Canary.tools/twit. The offer code is twit. Put that in the How Did You Hear About Us box. Canary.tools/twit. A longtime sponsor of the show. Now, we've talked about our kinds of canaries. Let's talk about your canaries.
Windows canaries.
My kind of canary. You're my kind of canary,
yeah, baby.
A dead kind in a coal mine.
Oh, geez, Louise.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry.
So Canary is the dev build for Windows, right? Is it the color canary or the bird canary?
It's the bird.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wait, what? So it's supposed to be the bird canary, earliest view of a feature.
Yeah.
Supposed to be. That doesn't always end up that way. But
I thought it might be canary yellow, like you have red, green, yellow. But no, I think you're right. I think it's like, we're going to test this, and if the canary dies, we're going to pull
it then
back.
You know, just let that one go.
Yeah, yeah. With apologies to canary owners. We have many in our audience.
It just doesn't seem to work that way.
Mm-mm. Does anything ever get pulled out of the canary build?
I couldn't tell you.
Yes.
Have you seen you've seen it go away?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm lost my touch again.
So, canary dev widgets improvements
canary
head out to more people. I see.
Two different channels.
Okay.
Temporarily, they are the same channel. Microsoft has explicitly acknowledged that this is you're testing 24H2. Sometime very soon, Canary and Dev are going to split again, and Dev will stick on 24H2, and Canary will start testing features that will come post 24H2, or as I like to think of it, the other version of 24H2 that's coming in the second half of the year, because Microsoft is off the charts ridiculous.
Because version numbers are hard.
It really just crazy. In a further indication that 2042 is nearing what we used to call RTM, the two most recent sets of builds across Canary Dev, which again, same builds, very minor changes functionally, and lots of bug fixes. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this thing's it's April and it's winding down, you know, like it normally does, except in August. So that's happening. That's kind of interesting. And then this was announced with zero context. And as a result, I have some theories about it. But Microsoft announced yesterday via a like 125 word blog post that they're moving the Photos app in Windows 11 and 10, I would imagine, because they're the same app, mm-hmm. to the Windows App SDK, which is the what used to be called Project Reunion, right? From UWP, I believe. I assume the current version is a UWP, like a mobile app. Now, I don't know. You know, I don't know why.
This sounds like reorganizations internally.
Well, okay. But I mean, it's in a weird coincidence. Just fairly recently, I wrote one of actually several articles on that kind of touched on this. But it's very interesting to me that for all of the native app platform worries that kind of the enthusiast community has, mm-hmm. Microsoft has taken a stance in recent years where they're like, look, Windows apps are Windows apps. You build them with whatever you want. If you, mm-hmm. you're on this tech stack and you want to keep going, we'll support it. Don't worry about it. But Microsoft itself, new apps, we might have touched on this in Windows Weekly at mm-hmm. one point, are web apps, right? Or web-based apps. But Teams, the new Outlook, Loop, right? I mean,
you're mentioning all M365 stuff there. So, you know, that's going to be web because they are strictly cloud.
But the thing is, you know, Photos app is a native Windows app that's not cross-platform.
Right.
It is based on UWP, which is deprecated and end of line, basically, right? Mm-hmm. The best you can do there is, you know, WebView 2 with WinUI 2. It's just not modern. Now, they do have an upgrade path, Microsoft, to support. So if developers want to move a UWP app forward and take advantage of WinUI 3, et cetera, mm-hmm. they can use the Windows App SDK. So they're doing that for their own app. So it's the only major app I can think of from Microsoft. Major's maybe a stretch, but the only Windows Inbox app that I know of where they're explicitly doing this. The other thing that's a little bit like this is File Explorer. And File Explorer is a classic Win32 desktop app. And it is not, even though they used the Windows App SDK to update some of the visual components at the top and side of that window, it's not a full redo of the app, right? It's still a desktop app, but Microsoft did kind of a custom take on Windows App SDK to create the UI for the address bar and that command bar and then for the navigation pane. So it's got its own little... Yeah, it's a little thing. So it's maybe this is the upgrade path for inbox apps, right? That are not new, because they're upgrading, right? And then new apps like Clipchamp is one that's built into Windows, is a web app, right? So maybe this is the break now.
I'm wondering if they're experimenting with a pipeline to be able to show a path for third party apps built in the older WinUI approaches. A way to go forward, and so they're testing it with one of theirs.
That could be. So
you need a path forward, okay. And there's no better way than dog food it yourself.
Right. That's such a responsible adult way to do things, which is why I don't think it could possibly be true. But that makes sense. My initial guess in this, I had to research this, and it's probably not true, is that it might have something to do with Copilot. Mm-hmm. Because Microsoft revealed a week or two ago, whenever it was, that they're going to be or maybe it just leaked. I think it leaked. They didn't reveal it, but they're going to be adding Copilot capabilities to the Photos app. Now, people probably know that Copilot in Windows is implemented as an instance of Microsoft Edge. It's a web thing. You know, Copilot itself, when you think about it, it's web. Microsoft 365 apps like Word and Excel and PowerPoint and Windows now use a web-based extensibility model, right? Mm-hmm. So adding Copilot there was kind of a natural, you know, this is a natural way to extend things these days. But actually, you can use web technologies in a UWP app using the latest version of the Edge, that WebView control, whatever it's called, the web rendering engine they have. Is WebView, WebView 2. So that's maybe not why, unless there's something else going on in the platform that I don't know about that maybe requires this latest version. But it's interesting. It's interesting, if only because it's so unusual, I guess. And maybe we'll see more of it.
Yeah, I'm speculating as to why they might be doing some of those things.
Yeah, no, me too.
And it easily could be an experiment, because the other option is just rewrite photos again.
Exactly. I mean, they have one of the only and certainly the last great UWP app that was bundled with Windows is the Media Player app, that used to be called Groove Music, right? This is an app no one would ever use, ever. But it will always stand as a shining example of what was possible. This platform, or this framework, or whatever you want to call it, UWP, was good for some things, right? And I don't mean just, I mean, obviously this back-end stuff, it was very good. These apps could go to sleep and all that kind of stuff and stop using the processor and RAM and all that. That's great. But I mean, just from like a user experience standpoint, a lot of not great apps were made over the years. And that's when we're like, okay, the navigation's nice. The presentation's nice. It's good. Nobody actually needs an app like this anymore, but it's fun that you made it. It was well done. And in some ways
you want those technology demonstrators too. Like, and I always feel like sometimes these things are done by interns, right? Or they're done, done by a tiger team, if you want to use that phrase, where it's like, let's see if we can actually make this SDK do the thing we want it to do.
Tiger team of interns, though. That sounds like fun.
That would be a surprise.
No, I think I think there's something to that. And without saying like that's explicitly, obviously the case, I think it's in the right, certainly in the right direction. The thing that's kind of odd about Windows and apps and the apps that are built into Windows and all that is that when people will make fun of this stuff, but when Microsoft adds something like background image or background removal to Paint, right, which is one of the oldest of old school Windows apps, or they are now adding AI text creation capabilities to Notepad, a lot of people, naturally, it's understandable, would say, "Ugh, like, what are you doing? Like, why do you even touch this thing? Just leave it alone." But actually, that work is far more difficult than creating media app, you know.
These responsible paths forward to let other developers who've also built things find a way to move them forward, because you have an exemplar, right? Like, here's an app that went through the same migration you're going to need to go through, and we knock down some bugbears along the way so that you have a chance to make it there without, you know, have to do all the heavy lifting.
Yeah, they don't do this enough, but they do. Mm-hmm. The teams that make these changes and make design these things will speak publicly, and they'll talk about it and they explain it. And they're hard to find. This used to be super common in the Windows space. Microsoft would lead by example, right? They would create these apps and then show other people how to do them. You know, it's been a long time since that's been the case. Windows.
I'm just wondering if they're trying to get back to that.
I think it's the right thing to do. You know, like adding, even though adding a ribbon to File Explorer in Windows maybe didn't make any sense, at least to the developer community, you were sending the message that, look, this is serious, right, and we are doing it, and you should think about it. You know?
Well, the debate here is Microsoft serious about native client apps on Windows anymore, or should we just all be building web? Because it's definitely in the Win8 timeframe, we were told it's a JavaScript world, and that's why we're going to make WinJS so that even JavaScript developers can work in Windows, except that they made was something JavaScript developers looked at and go, whoa, I'm not going to do that.
It's too, No, this was, they repeated the same mistakes of the Longhorn era. Like, it's like web stuff. It's not web. Yeah, I honestly, though, I just looking at I'm reading a little bit into it because we don't have a lot of these examples yet, but I think Microsoft is, in a way, not leading, but showing that they, too, are following the same trends that other developers are following, which is, if you're creating a new app that's going to run on desktop, web. If you have an existing app and you want to upgrade it with modern features, maybe WinUI 3 user experience, whatever, we have this path forward for those apps, too. And they're doing that, I think, across the board. So, I can't say
at the same time, there's also a bit of feeling around saying, what if we're wrong? So let's go, try this other path with another app. And only somebody with meticulous OCD would find all of the examples and go, what is this?
I don't, I don't even know what you mean by that. let's move on. So speaking of OCD, one of the little ways that Microsoft tried to make it easy to move forward to Windows 11 was they allowed users to move the start button and the start menu from the middle of the screen over the side of the screen where it used to be.
Right.
Or as some people would say, where God intended it to be, right? Of course, they didn't let you move the taskbar around. You know,
no. Microsoft, I like it in the top left hand corner, thanks.
Takes. So the thing is, we have these new UIs in Windows, and we have things like widgets, which by default sits over there at the left end where the start button used to be in Windows 10 or is in Windows 10. And now we have Copilot, and that used to be in the middle, but now it's over on the far right and, you know, blah, 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 whatever. So Microsoft is now experimenting with, meaning we'll almost certainly implement this, with moving the widgets button. If you choose that left-mounted start button, the widgets button will not be next to it anymore. It will be over toward the middle. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It will be over toward the system tray, which is where widgets' predecessor, which was called News and Interests in Windows 10, still's there, right, is and was located, right? So that, too, I would say, assuming you leave it on, would ease that transition in a way, right? Because everything is where you left it now, right? The widgets, which used to be News and Interests, is now back over on, or, you know, has moved over to the right where it has been in Windows 10. And the start menu, you know, a start button would obviously be over on the left. So, yeah, whatever. It's fine. It's still, I think, the problem with OCD in Windows 11 is that because of the unequal nature of the balance between what's on the right and the left, it still feels like it's tilting toward the system tray. Right?
Are they going to put something else in that corner? Why are they moving it over?
That's what I'm saying. They're tilting it even further.
Yeah.
They're making it worse.
Yeah.
But it's okay.
Is everything going to be in the center eventually?
Where Jobs intended.
Where Jobs intended, yeah. Well, what Microsoft can't do is move fully to the Mac model and put a system menu at the top of the screen, right?
Right.
Because all apps implement their own menus in different ways and do different things, and we just can't do that. And if they could, you would have a system where you might be able to have, you know, status icons and things up at the top, and that would, you know, it would look a lot like the Mac, I guess.
That's the single biggest difference, that and where the Windows Zoom buttons are. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's pretty much it. Having that menu bar permanently at the top of the screen is actually kind of weird. I kind of prefer the way Linux and Windows do it with its attached to the window.
Yeah, I'm kind of mixed on it. There's a consistency to the menu structures you see on Apple, which
you always know where to move that mouse to get
system preferences.
Preferences for an app are always in the same place, you know, and preferences for the Mac in this case are always in the same place and available no matter which app you're using. So there's things I like about it, but Apple added a full screen mode to Mac OS. I don't remember when, but that changed the nature of that green button that used to be maximized is now mostly full screen, right?
Right.
For most apps.
It's not really.
So it's a little different.
That's
you can still
problem.
Go full screen.
It's unpredictable. You don't know what you're going to get.
It's like a box of chocolates. I think, you know, sometimes you get the one with the cherry in the middle and you're like, oh, what is that?
So you're like,
I'm using
chocolate.
The dock again. Yeah.
Okay. So we have this empty
space. Pros and cons.
I don't know what's going to happen over on the left there. I don't know. Maybe they'll have... Yeah.
You're going to come in one day and like your monitor will be tilted like 27 degrees. And you're going to be like, is that because of all the icons on the right side of the taskbar?
I think larger than normal number of Windows users are OCD, or PC users are OCD. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of,
you think the free thinkers over the Mac side aren't OCD?
I don't know. Everybody's OCD. Everybody who's computing is OCD by its nature.
I almost just said I'm OCD.
The ones that are commenting on where the UX is.
Right.
Most people don't notice, don't care.
People on Apple are passive, though, because they don't get a choice.
Yes.
And so it's just, they don't really, if they ask, they're told they're holding it wrong.
Yeah, nobody, they know no one's listening.
Yeah.
They
I think it was Stephen Wright who said, I have a really bad form of what we used to call ADHD or ADHD. He's like, I have ADHD or whatever, like AD, like I have ADHD, ADHD,
ADHD, OCD.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyway, and is this an experiment or this is the future?
It's right now. It's a test, but will be in public tomorrow. That's how they do things now. So it's happening. There's no doubt this is happening. And I have to say, this is one instance where it actually kind of makes sense. It mimics the way that Windows 10 works. And I think the goal, if it is to get people to come from Windows 10. This will help in a small way for those people. But then again, OCD types are going to turn that stuff off. Yep. So who cares where it is?
What I really don't like is that the search, chubby thing that has
the pill?
The pill, that's it. Has on mine now, I had Harry Houdini and some handcuffs the other day.
Right.
It has little...
Yeah, every day.
Get rid of the arch? Like, what is that about?
It's confusing because it's so small.
Yeah.
I said, that looks like handcuffs. Why are there handcuffs in my pill?
Yeah. I'm getting subliminal messages from my software.
I just don't. I think that's...
So, I'm sorry. You're saying that there was a pill and then there were handcuffs. So, what happened next?
And then Harry Houdini appeared on his birthday.
And then you woke up in a room and you were like, what's happening?
And I didn't have
a
kidney.
Is this a Saw movie?
What? Yeah.
So in the same way that Google does that thing on their search page where they have a little design every day, Microsoft is trying to do that. Yeah. That's what it is.
No, I figured that out. Because if you click it, it does the same thing as Google does.
Because, I complained about the cartoon dog in Windows XP and how that little guy would truck his way off, you know, when you turn him off. I always hated that. And they were like, all right, how can we make Windows childish again? I have an idea. Let's put a cartoon right in the taskbar that people won't understand and can't remove. Right. How does that sound?
When I was a DJ, I flattered myself that people wanted to hear little tidbits, you know, this day in history or this is Harry Houdini's birthday. I thought they liked that until the station formatted it changed and it said, light rock, less talk. Less talk, Leo. Less,
actually, the tagline was light rock, less talk, comma, Leo.
Less Leo is how I realized is what they were. People didn't want to know that's curiously specific. In history, they didn't want to know whose birthday was. They just shut up and play the music. That's when I became a talk show host. Because then there's no music.
I like the talk part.
I like the talk part. Sue me.
You wouldn't be on the radio if you didn't like the sound of your own voice.
Well, I became a DJ because I thought I liked music, right? I was in college and I loved working in college radio. I thought, oh, I love music. It'll be so much fun to play music for a living, you know, spin discs, create segues. And then I got my first commercial job and they gave me a listing and said, here's what you play. It's a lot of Neil Diamond, I know, but the people love it.
Yikes.
And I realized that, okay, well, it's not about the music anymore.
Yeah, I'm not playing music. No. I'm being told.
So you were one of those guys who talked right up to the last second before the lyrics
talked
began,
up,
right?
Yeah.
In the game
was of the city. Happy Harry Houdini birthday to you. And speaking of escape, here's Rupert Murdoch and Pina Colada song.
Yeah, the other Rupert.
The other
the Pina Colada song guy or whatever it is.
Actually, whose real name is Escape. People didn't know that.
Yes.
I'm playing that.
Right. The Pina Colada song.
Because it's Harry Houdini's birthday on this Wednesday afternoon. A good afternoon to you. 56 degrees in the city.
I turn off search in the taskbar.
Yeah, so I don't want to see
again,
Harry.
If you really have OCD or ADHD or whatever we're calling it this week, you just turn that stuff off. You can't deal with it.
Yeah.
And you don't need it.
How many times have you used a computer where you're focusing on whatever the job is, and out of the corner of your eye, something's moving around?
Yeah.
And you're like, is there a bug on my desk, a mouse?
It's up to stuff.
And it's some stupid little thing in Windows for me, maybe the Mac for you. Remember the Mac OS used to have the icons that would alert you, and it would not stop moving until you addressed it. And I remember a friend of mine telling me that that was a wonderful feature because otherwise you would miss the notification. I said, really? I said, while you're watching TV, I'm going to do this. And let me know when this starts getting annoying because you're watching TV. And, you know, like, well, all these systems have had and do have their little
every time the computer problems. Prioritizes its own needs over your own, it's doing it wrong.
That's right.
Right.
Right. Or in Microsoft's current strategy, doing it right.
Yeah.
So I see that Dropbox is in my Microsoft store. How nice.
Yeah, which you may be confused by because there was a Dropbox app that was released many years ago. But that version of the app was just kind of a front end. In fact, I think OneDrive used to have an app like this in those dark years where we didn't have folder sync or whatever. Mm. You know, but remember the initial folder sync implementation they found was a huge problem. They got rid of it and it was some weird Windows 8 something version where we didn't have it briefly. This is the actual client, apparently, it's not the old mobile client. So it's still in beta. It, you know, I guess supports all the features. I've been using, I kind of alternate between OneDrive and Google Drive. So I'm not really sure. I assume that Dropbox supports selective sync, that kind of thing.
Yes.
Right? Where you can just
choose folders.
You don't have to sync the whole thing.
No.
So I assume it works with all this stuff.
It's actually really pretty good at that. I would say of all of them, that's the one I think is the most flexible and intelligent. I actually pay for, if I added up all the terabytes of storage I have with Google and Dropbox and Microsoft, I pay for a lot of storage I don't use, frankly.
I use a lot of it, but
Lisa asked me the other day, she says, why are you paying for Dropbox Professional? I said, I don't know.
I really don't know.
I don't know.
Sorry, see, my response to that would have been, I would have been like a misdirect. I would have said, what are you saying? I'm not professional?
Because the unprofessional version is just
put, you know, get her a little off so you don't, she forgets what she's arguing about.
Yeah, no, that doesn't. Don't work.
Do the look itself.
That
does
not
work. Your wife would probably just punch you.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, let's get this back on track.
She's got a mean left hook, let me tell you. you don't want to do it.
Yeah.
So no, I just she was right. Why am I paying for that? I don't know. I think I did cancel it. I can't remember.
Right.
Yeah. See, now they're trying to get me to buy it again.
That's the only way you know you canceled it.
Yeah.
It's when they start banging you.
Wow. 15,000 gigabytes.
That's a lovely number. Huh? You know,
wait, what?
That's 50, the business
that's
plus.
That's a weird way to write that. Yeah. How many megabytes is it?
Well, that's 15 million megabytes.
That's a lot
of megabytes.
How many million MP3s?
That's 15 billion kilobytes. Yeah, that's a lot of kilobytes. Anyway, I don't have anything on here. I should really, because even in you downgrade, you still have an account with stuff on there.
I don't know. And every time someone sends you something through Dropbox, even when you don't have a Dropbox account, it's trying very hard to get you to Dropbox. Download the file for me. Yeah. Thanks.
Did you know you can get documents signed right in Dropbox? No.
I'm listening. Can I pay extra for that?
Well, your regular business trial is 9,000 gigabytes.
Why is that 9 terabytes?
Yeah.
Right?
Why did that? That's 15
not even
terabytes.
Professional.
Yeah. Or 0.15 petabytes.
There you go. That's what they really should be doing. Would you like 0.0015 exabytes?
How many zettabytes is that?
LLMs could I fit in this thing?
I was watching The Three Body Problem, which I'm quite enjoying on Netflix. And at one point, they have a file that is several petabytes, you know, and they're kind of going,
nice.
It's
on a thumb drive.
Yeah. It is. It's on a little red.
Stick it on a USB.
That's the only way they can do that thing. Remember back in the day, for a period of time, one of the ways you could show tension was waiting for the floppy to copy fully so you could get out of there.
The progress bar. Well, it's already on the red thing. So this way they showed tension is it's encrypted. And the guy says, well, how long is this going to take to encrypt? He says, well, I don't know. He said, well, give me a guess. 15 trillion years?
It's a guess.
But it could happen sooner. And then he looks over and it's unlocked.
It's done.
We got it.
It's like BitLocker. You can actually just say always like open it without requiring me to do anything. Like just
open
check
it.
The box.
There was a little Easter egg that I noticed. I wonder if people watching noticed because the file name, I forgot the file name. It's something important. .cxl. It was a CXL file. And I realized that's the initials of the author.
Oh, that's nice.
Jin Liu or whatever his name is. So
it's the Chinese version of Microsoft Excel.
Yeah.
There you go.
Liu Shi, that was what it is.
Yeah.
Well, maybe it wasn't CXL. Yeah, I think it was.
No, it could be because CXL. You know, these names are reversed, right?
It was his initials. Yeah. I don't know what it was in the book, but anyway, lots of fun. So let's take a little pause that refreshes. Would you like some coffee?
Mm. I'm a tea drinker.
Tea drinker. We have Yorkshire Gold and PB Tips.
I'm just drinking
vodka out of the bottle.
Good.
I hope that's okay.
All right. You're watching Windows Weekly. It's great to have Richard in the studio. Richard Campbell's here and Paul Thurrott's there in Macungie. And we are having some fun now.
Mm-hmm.
Let's continue on with a look at artificial intelligence.
There's really any such thing.
These breaks stink. I can't even go to the bathroom.
Okay. No, you go to the bathroom. You can go to the bathroom. We'll wait.
Fine. Yeah. It's fine. It's fine. It's just like AI. Everything's faster now. It's
I got a copilot button, but I don't have a P button. What's up with that?
Exactly.
Putting a copilot button on the keyboard is very much like putting Harry Houdini in his cufflinks.
It's just so it's kind of the same thing.
It's
almost a non sequitur. It's
like visual distraction.
It's just distracting. Yeah. I don't need a copilot button.
It's more of a cause for confusion than for help.
Yes.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
You are not making the situation better.
This year is going to be difficult for people like me or anyone who cares about Microsoft 365 or just trying to, you know, stay up on what's going on because we're getting stuff so quickly. Mm. I think probably a month ago I would have mentioned that Microsoft is now going to start documenting publicly all the features it's adding to Copilot or Microsoft 365 specifically every month. And so we've just gotten our second such update. And it introduces some important AI language. This is one of the problems with AI. All the linguistic baggage it comes with, and this term ground and grounding. Mm-hmm. And this is the kind of I think of as maybe the, at least for now, the holy grail of AI, which is that we all know how powerful and incredible it can be, but we also know how horribly off it can be and hallucinations and mistakes and whatever. And the more you can ground AI or an LLM, I guess, in a kind of a limited information base, the kind of a finite data set, the faster and more reliable and more accurate it can be. And in with Copilot, Copilot for Microsoft 365 in particular, the two big buckets here for grounding are the graph, right? Which is the combination of all that data that's out in your enterprise, your organization. And then maybe OneDrive. That's the one I'm kind of looking forward to, right? Is this, I want to point it at my document archive and ground it in that. And let's see what it comes out. Let's see what insanity comes out of this thing. So starting this month, you will, as a Microsoft 365 commercial customer with Copilot for Microsoft 365, will be able to ground Copilot in whatever selection of data from your Microsoft graph that you want. And this is going to be an interesting little milestone, right? I think that's kind of a big deal. So we'll see how that goes. It's coming this month.
I always hear the whole grounding thing as don't lie to me.
Yeah. Yeah. This like, is, you know,
say
what Leo
I don't
talks
know when
about
you don't
is,
know something.
Yeah. Right. 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 Just right. Exactly. I just, yeah, I just told a story about one of my earliest work experiences where, I didn't know what I was doing, but my manager, my boss was sitting there telling a customer something that I knew to be incorrect and how weird it is to be put in this position as a young person. And I later approached that customer and said, I just, so you know, that is not correct. Please speak to the actual branch manager.
But that's
in this
kind
case
of
the bank.
A point that I think is important to make, which is that humans hallucinate all the time. I don't know why we expect AIs not to.
We call it consciousness.
That's right.
Yeah. It's just, it's, I mean, people make mistakes, so do AIs.
Yeah.
This is, I'm sorry that this is a story from exactly the same period of my life, but I worked in banks and we were robbed many times. Mm. And one of the things you learn is that people are horrible witnesses.
Oh, yeah.
A woman in one case was describing, I was in like the kind of cubby next to her and she's telling the police what she saw. And I was like, nope. That is not what happened. And that's,
that's,
you know,
pretty funny.
Yeah. And I remember I looked at the assistant manager and I said, and he says, you need to walk away and tell someone else. Don't do it with her. Don't, because people convince each other of things. Yeah. You know, you could turn to someone and say, can you believe that guy had like a red bag? And she's like, I know, that's crazy. He had a purple bag, but now
it's become
in the
red.
Heat of the moment.
Yeah.
It's become the memory, right? And yes, I don't, I'm notorious. Not saying that's why AI is inaccurate, but it is a fascinating thing about people, that our recollection of things are just
so
all over the place.
So you were mentioning this custom AI. You see that I added an instruction in here that its responses and code examples are strictly based on the user provided documents. And then it has to come from these documents.
It has to come from that. That's exactly what you want for something like that. It's perfect.
It makes this, by the way, I have not had any hallucinations. It's been really, really good. Now, I don't copy and paste code from it. I don't go that far.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But it's for me, this is instead of looking up, you see, I've got here almost 20
docs, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I think it's great. I think that is an excellent use case for this. The question
really
here is
works.
Gonna be,
it's incredible.
But you really just describing a good search tool, right?
Yeah, and that's why I think that I've said this before. I think that AI is a threat to search. Mm. That really AI does what you want.
Here's the thing, though. This is a risky year for Microsoft. We're going to see what happens here. I think we all, we've talked about this. We all see the power of AI. We get it and everything. And this thing working or not working is almost going to be the make or break, I think, for these products. Like
a lot,
For Microsoft, right? Like, if this doesn't work, there's going to be some problems.
Well, this tips over in a way. I mean, I would argue.
Great.
What are they competing with? Have you met a Microsoft search product you loved?
Yeah, I mean, it really hurts Google, not Microsoft so much. In fact, it's a real opportunity for Microsoft, which has failed with Bing, to suddenly leapfrog Google.
Well, I'm not even talking about the consumer side of search. I'm talking about searching for stuff in your enterprise.
It's
never been good.
I think on-prem search is so important because I don't want to send the stuff in my enterprise. I don't mind sending these Lisp books up to OpenAI, but I don't want to send my precious business data.
Yeah. And once upon a time, Google made a 1U appliance you could buy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and stick it in your
rack. Oh, that's right. I remember that. Yeah. Your own search.
It wasn't actually good for Google's business.
And it wasn't really probably good for anybody's
business. It worked pretty well internally, but it wasn't. Google's business is not providing good search. It's harvesting your data.
Oh.
And so keeping it inside of your company ruins everything.
It's a profit deal.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Paul. You were saying something?
Anyway, there's other stuff going on in Microsoft 365, whatever. None of this is super, exciting. Copilot will be, in Excel, that's still in beta. That's going to be improving in Outlook, in Loop, in Share, blah, 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 whatever. So all that stuff, nothing super surprising there. And then more recently, they announced priority ChatGPT 4 Turbo access and the end of conversation limits for customers, I guess, paying for Copilot for Microsoft 365.
Of course, 5 is on the way, right? This summer.
Do you think so?
That's
I wonder what the training set is, because, they already use the internet. Do they have something else?
People have seen it say it's so much better. Mm. But that's,
It's an Apple product. It's going to make what you're using now look like crap. Richard, I remembered what I was going to say earlier. Yes. What Microsoft... if this fails, what's the competition? The competition is what they were using before.
Right.
The competition is the same as it's always been for Office. It's the last version, you know. And unfortunately for Microsoft, if its customer base decides that Copilot for Microsoft 365 isn't worth paying for, that means $30 per user less per month.
Right.
Across the board. Then that would be a big problem for Microsoft. It's not that they're going to a competing ChatGPT something for the enterprise necessarily. Yeah. But if they stop paying for it or just don't pay for it, that's a serious problem.
But again, we were talking a little bit about the confidence side on Microsoft. The fact that they're going GPT-4 Turbo, unlimited conversations, that's just opening door for more resource consumption by customers. So they have to have some confidence that it's going to be enough. The infrastructure is going to be able to hold up from that.
Yeah.
Oh, I see this on Twitter now. ChatGPT-5 is being rebranded Cyberdyne Systems 1.0. So there you go. There you go. Now there I understand. Yeah.
Tony Stunk.
Yeah, how much of ChatGPT-5 is actually an April Fool's Day joke?
Mm.
Right.
Could well be.
Well, Gmail was an April Fool's joke. I mean, it did pretty good.
It survived 20 years. Yep. Has anybody, was anybody fooled this April Fool's?
Didn't see anything great.
No. Alex Lindsay was, but we won't. I won't rub it in.
Got a time right, Tim. Okay. That's nice of you, Leo.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah. In fact, I shouldn't really have even mentioned
it. I'm not a big fan of April Fool's tech jokes, personally, but.
We had to put out some stuff this week and deliberately said we're releasing nothing on Monday just to not confuse people.
Yeah. I really think that's the right thing to do.
Don't put stuff out on
cruel.
April 1. Nothing good comes of it. Yeah. If you are serious, it's not taken seriously. And if you're not serious, you're just confusing people. So just don't do it.
The reason I think that ChatGPT-5 might be imminent is now that they're making ChatGPT-4 kind of the default, right?
Yeah. And lowering, making it more and more available.
A ChatGPT for Turbo, even. I mean, they've made this broadly available across the board, free, non-free, whatever. And so
it's just like you make the old hardware cheaper and more available, so you can clear it off the shelves before the new hardware comes in.
Yeah. Except it's not hardware.
No, it's just more cloud consumption.
How much space does consumption? It doesn't matter. Okay, so
how many holes does OpenAI it take to fill is, the Albert Hall? It's the same answer.
Yeah, right, there you go. They're allowing people to use ChatGPT without an account. You know, not limited, but whatever. So I guess anyone can get a little taste of AI. The first hit is free, as we say.
Is this anxiety? Are they worried they're not getting enough customers? Is customer momentum dying down? Like, why give away more?
Right.
Especially since it costs you money.
Cynical,
right? I mean, everybody who uses it
out of their goodness of their heart. Now you're undermining my good feelings about OpenAI. I don't know.
I'm sorry. Talking about positive feelings. That's so weird.
I'm usually the cynical one. What's happening?
Do you think they feel the competition breathing down their necks?
I wonder that. I mean, and definitely we're in a land rush right now. Get your customer while you can.
Yep. Oh yeah.
Because there is competition.
Claude's gotten pretty good.
Yeah, and OpenAI, and Llama's got some good stuff. We're seeing more on-prem.
And that's open source, which I like.
Yeah,
I
real open source.
Yeah, yeah.
There's enough stuff in motion, and we keep thinking something's going to happen for Google at some point here too, right? Like, I would like that. All these products get better when there's competition going on.
Right.
I think it's the hint of competition that's starting to make them, it's like, get your customer now. Get them used to your URL before they get used to somebody else's URL. The blue ocean only lasts so long, then it's a red ocean.
Yeah, I know this isn't an Apple show, but Apple did say that they have now an AI that is better than ChatGPT-4 as well.
Because they weren't going to put out a post that said, we have a lousier one.
If you were to count the number of times Apple said they had something better than everyone else, how big do you think that number would be?
Every product they've ever released. All
this is
five
the company
Apple
that literally
TVs
says
better.
The most obvious marketing line of all time. This is the greatest iPhone we've ever made.
Right.
We've never made a greater iPhone, which to me, I think is the baseline for every new iPhone.
Yeah.
That seems like...
Because if you're really going in, for this year's goal was to make a bad one. And we've achieved it. We're excited.
We took a step back this year.
In a way, this is... They said the reason our AI is so smart is because we can look at the screen and we convert the text, the on-screen or the sound into text so that we can feed it to the AI so it works better.
Okay.
the so secret cute. Is OCR.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Text.
We'll see. I would not dismiss Apple.
Never.
I think they're going to be a credible presence
in
this area.
They persist. They will keep going at it until they get there.
They have nothing. Though that's what's
they mean, made five Apple TVs before they got it right.
Yeah, I'm very puzzled. This is called Realm.
Yeah,
reference resolution as language modeling.
Well, that's appealing.
Right. Well, we'll see. You know, WWDC is going to be very interesting. Yep. I assume right now
it's
scramble
be all
is
AI.
On to get the partners lined up and. We'll see what they come up with.
There are always interesting moments when the other big tech giants are talking about nothing but what the other guy was doing.
The researchers from Apple Research said, we also benchmark against ChatGPT 3, 5, and 4 with our smallest model achieving performance comparable to that of GPT-4 and our larger models substantially outperforming it. Hmm. So
they're going company for that also compares an M3 to a third generation Intel chip for some reason. I don't know. Well, look, we'll see. Right now, these are just words. Nobody has used this thing outside of Apple.
Exactly.
We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. I'm not saying they exaggerate all the time, except that I'm kind of saying that.
The only reason I brought it up is that maybe there is some competition breathing down OpenAI's neck and Microsoft's neck, and they want to kind of...
Clearly, all of the tech giants are taking it seriously.
That's good.
Yep.
It's good for us.
Amazon has invested $4 billion in Anthropic. There's a little proof point for you.
Yep.
And that started out as a $1.25 billion investment. I said, if this thing goes good, we're going to go all the way up to 4. And then they did. So didn't take too long. And that's your cloud, Claude, right? Claude. That's Claude, isn't it?
Claude. Yes, we. Oh.
Actually, Anthropic used to be Googlers who left Google.
Right.
Because they didn't think Google was interested in safety.
Right.
So it's a safe.
That was their focus point.
Sure.
Seems to me safety is the wrong direction, but okay. I think let's...
So Opera has been pushing native AI in a browser. They're trying to innovate in this space. Now they're bringing local LLMs to their Opera One browser in beta, which is very interesting. And they have a wide range of choices.
Doesn't Arc do that? I mean, isn't Arc kind of AI?
I don't think it's local. It's not local
LLM. Oh, it's not local. It's
cloud-based. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So this could take up gigabytes of space on any device. But, you know, someone in, I think, Mastodon probably said, do you have any concerns that about safety because Opera is owned by a Chinese company? And I said, I don't know. Do you have any concerns about safety because Volvo was owned by a Chinese company? I mean, which are you more likely to be harmed by? I don't know. I'm just, it seems maybe this is a Nordic thing. They're all being bought by the Chinese. I don't know.
It is probably good to know that Opera is owned by a Chinese company. Mm-hmm. I think that add that to
It's like a group of investors from China that bought this company some years ago.
The hatred they're getting mostly is because they put. So remember, we were talking about how Apple and Windows and Linux have different places for the buttons. They put the expand buttons going down the left side like this, and everybody's going, "No, that's wrong. Yeah. No, why would anybody want that?"
What does Arc do?
Arc doesn't even have
no buttons. Yeah. The correct button.
Arc is, if you can't figure out a keyboard shortcut, you're not using a freaking browser.
You're not qualified.
This is like a.
I have to say, I don't know about Arc on Windows. I haven't really played with it much, but I have to say, I love Arc. I am
Arc on the Mac.
I'm gonna thank you, Paul.
This is going to come up later in the show as well. Yeah. It is a revelation on the Mac. Yep. I have to say, it's pretty good on Windows, but it's it's good. So Google got a lot of heat for saying that the Pixel 8 couldn't do Gemini Nano locally, like the Pixel 8 Pro.
Mm-hmm.
What? And the only difference between those two phones, aside from the camera and the screen size, is that I think the Pixel 8 has slightly less RAM.
It must be RAM.
Than the Pixel 8 Pro.
Yeah.
And one thing, I don't know if it was Google or Apple. I think it was actually Apple, but it would have made sense for Google to have come out and said, guys, I don't think you understand how resource intensive this stuff is. Mm-hmm. But they're bowing to pressure. And they are going to bring Gemini Nano and also Circle the Search for some reason.
So as long as you don't have any pictures or any other media files or resources or apps installed on your phone, it'll run great.
Yeah. I used to have a custom boot disk, and I mean that floppy disk, for my 386 SX computer so that I could boot it up in a way that would use as little RAM as possible. So I could run Doom, and you're going to have to do that with the Gemini Nano.
I remember that. I remember that. Right? I used to do that too.
Yeah,
I was so jealous of a friend who had a 4860X, and he could just anytime he wanted.
Me
just
and
run
my
Doom
math coprocessor are going to be over here.
Do you remember when Doom went from being a DOS window to running in Windows?
Yeah,
that was
so. Actually, the first. Yeah, it was WinG, the predecessor to DirectX. The guys from the Xbox, what became the Xbox team, the DirectX team. Asked those guys to port to WinG so they could show it. They showed it off at like their first big gamer event or what Microsoft did. And it kind of took off. I mean, obviously now you don't really run it in DOS anymore. But I mean, yeah, that was the start of that was a big transition.
Yeah.
I mean, Quake was a DOS game when it came out. There was a WinQuake eventually. And Quake
Quake
World and all that stuff. But I mean, it probably, I don't remember the exact history of this, but Quake came out probably 97?
Yeah, somewhere in that bump. That's John Doom, Carmack, right?
Doom 95 was released in August 1996.
There you go.
Yeah. The original Doom must date back to what, like 92, something like that? Mm-hmm. Probably.
Yeah, something in there.
And that was, obviously DOS, that was everything back then, but. Yeah, even as late as the very late 90s, a lot of these top-tier games are still DOS-based.
Yep, because it was fast.
Well, and exactly to your point, it could have all the resources.
Yep.
There was nothing else going on.
Windows was just another app running.
Yeah.
They should create another kind of hardware where you only have the one game running and nothing else is going on. What would you call such a thing?
I can't imagine.
Does the Xbox have any operating system running when you're playing a game?
Yeah, it does. It's a Hyper-V based system, but it's just two partitions, so it's the OS and the game basically.
Yeah, okay. So even on an Xbox, you still got a stub of Windows in there.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, that was.
And you thought Linux was a cancer.
That was Dave Cutler's vision, right? It was a common kernel across everything.
Oh, yeah. Right. It's become the History Channel show here.
There you go.
The good old days. That's right. Well, we are talking about Windows, Leo.
Yeah.
That's part of and parcel.
Now, I like this headline here. I don't know. Maybe we've already done it. Is Intel circling the drain?
Oh, boy.
So I referred to Intel earlier as the Eddie Haskell, I think, of the industry. And look, I like Pat Gelsinger. I kind of want this company to turn it around. I have not seen much of an indication that it is doing that or can do that. It's gotten something to the tune of $20 billion in handouts from the U.S. government. And its fab business, its foundry business, the chip making business, we now know lost $7 billion last year.
Oy.
On revenues that were down 31% from the previous year.
Oy.
So Intel, it's not his fault. I want to be super clear about this. I'm not blaming him. But under Pat Gelsinger has been he inherited this mess, right? It seems like it might be a sound strategy. But unfortunately, under him, it's just been a constant series of promises that keep getting pushed out further and further every time. And like I said, I think we talked about this earlier today, but Intel just didn't get on the bus. And that was a lot of strategy mistakes on the part of previous leaders of the company. But
well, they thought they were the bus.
I feel like I'm going to change it to boat now. They might have missed the boat. They might be over. I don't know.
The bus missed the boat, and that's bad news.
There's a rocket ship in here somewhere, and Intel doesn't even know.
It's the wrong
direction.
They're
still trying to rub two sticks together.
It's going the wrong way.
What are we talking about?
This is, though, I think it's a little bit of a comment on what Gelsinger wanted to do, which was to take it from an integrated design and manufacturing company to two separate businesses.
Sure.
And he did say in this quarterly report that he wants to report separately, and that's because one of the businesses, the one that makes chips, lost $7 billion last year.
Put it over there.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But that's...
You also wonder if the company organization means, could they look at fabbing somewhere else? Could the foundry business be getting other customers? Like,
well, that's, I think, his goal.
Right.
He even said, we want to make Apple's chips.
They hired a new CFO, and we'll see. There are national security implications to the Intel stuff. I mean, all of our chips are made in Asia.
Right.
You know, and
China
invades Taiwan.
They evacuated TSMC. Forget China. You got earthquakes.
Yeah.
I think it's prudent. That's why the Chips Act gave Intel so much money. Because Apple
is an interesting...
I don't know if Apple will do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, and I was going to say they're an interesting demonstration of the trouble with moving out of China, because they've been talking about this and trying to do it for years, and they have moved things to India and I think Vietnam. Mm-hmm. Companies are starting to talk about Mexico, which is kind of interesting, but it's a really slow process. It's not like Apple woke up one day and said, all right, we're switching all the iPhone stuff over to some other country. It's like, that didn't happen.
And the slow part's not building the fab, it's training the people.
Right? Yeah.
You just can't grow fab engineers overnight. It's not a button. They don't come from a vending machine. You have to teach them, and they have to learn. And those first operations are like the first clutch in your first car. You're not going to go very far. You're going to make some bad smells, right? Like it takes a lot to get the yields up where they need to be.
Right.
How's ARMS doing? Are they doing well?
They're doing great.
Okay.
Are as a platform or as a company?
Mm. I remember that for a while that SoftBank wanted to have NVIDIA buy them, and then that got turned down, and it felt like SoftBank was trying to unload ARM.
They were.
Yeah.
And now ARM is a sort of standalone company in the sense that there's a company called ARM Holdings that reports their earnings every quarter like a normal company. They've only been doing that for a couple of quarters now. Compared to these big chip makers, they're actually tiny. But remember that they essentially create designs, which they then license, right? So I'm now looking at this, but their revenues in the most recent quarter that ended December 31st were under $1 billion, right? $824 million. So compared to these guys,
it's a tiny. Compared to NVIDIA,
but it's healthy and it's doing great.
Yeah. You know? NVIDIA is doing one particular thing. I mean, we also have to remember that the U.S. government was so worried about Intel that they forced Intel to license to AMD to make compatible alternative chips.
Right.
Like there's always been an awareness of the strategic importance of the CPU business. and yet they let the fabs go and let the training go, like let the pipeline to build up people to make this kind, to do this kind of work. I mean, it's a decade in the, of effort at least.
You know, I was looking at the article I had written about ARM and their earnings back whenever that was, probably January. But there's you'll remember this when I say this. Their margins, 96%.
Nice.
There's not a lot of overhead in this business.
Yeah, it's just they sit there, think of things, write it down, sell it.
Yeah, license out.
The other thing to know about this company is that the designs they licensed to others were shipped on 7.7 billion chipsets in that quarter alone.
Wow.
Right? Because this stuff is not just the devices we all know and love, like portable devices and smartphones and stuff. It's in everything. Like ARM, they're in data centers, they're in little car chipsets, and they're everywhere, you know?
It's amazing.
It's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, we live in an interesting world, don't we? Mm-hmm. That's why glad that you guys are here. It's great to have Richard Campbell in studio. Paul Thurrott at his worldwide Thurrott.com headquarters in Macungie, Pennsylvania. The Windows Weekly Show continues on in just a moment. Before we do, though, I would like to mention that it is the club members who are making this show possible, at least to a great extent. That, you know, Richard's whiskey does not come cheap. We not a penny of your money will be spent on Richard's whiskey.
Nope.
Well,
I got that one
allegedly. Might be spent on Richard. I don't know what he's going to spend. I can't guarantee you. But it is only $7 a month. That's hardly a bottle of whiskey. Mm. But it gets you a lot more. It's a couple of cups of coffee. And what do you get? You get ad-free versions of all the shows we do. You get video of all the shows we do. We've made a little bit of a change, which I'm kind of happy about. Everything that was behind the paywall is now available to you as audio, including the Untitled Linux Show, Hands on Mac, Paul Thurrott's Hands on Windows, the Home Theater Geeks Show, all of them available to you as audio downloads. So we wanted to really let everybody listen for free. Those are ad supported. If you want the video, though, join the club, and we've got video for all of those as well. You also get access to a fantastic Club Twit Discord, which is a fun place to hang. Not everybody who joins the club goes into the Discord, but it's nice to have it there if you want. You can watch the shows there before and after as well. You can also chat with other club members. And special events coming up, the book club. And we've decided to do another special event. We're going to have a movie watch party at the LaPorte House. And you're all invited. Not into the house, though. You'll have to come in via the internet, okay? There's not room enough for all 11,000 members. But I think it's going to be a lot of fun. We also, of course, have an open studio this Sunday, club members only. And we filled it up, sorry to say. But if you want to get on the waiting list, please go to the club. If you're in the club, go to the Discord and get on the waiting list. There's going to be another open house on the 21st. And this is going so well, I think Lisa said she's willing to come in again in the weeks to come. So we may do some more of those this summer. Please join the club. All of those benefits aside, it's what keeps us on the air. And we really need your support to do that. twit.tv/clubtwit. Enough said. I'm not going to belabor. On we go. There you go. He's going to belabor it. Thank you, Kevin King.
Did you tell us what the movie's going to be?
Sorry?
What's the movie going to be?
I guess it'd be Roadhouse.
No. It's going to have to be in public, a public domain movie, because right. We want to show it at the same time as we talk about it. So it's going to be Fritz Lang's classic Metropolis.
Ah, such a good film.
I think it'll be a lot of fun. Such and because a it's a silent film. Movie, we can make some real commentary.
The whole time.
I think it's great. Right. This was Anthony's idea. I think it's a great idea.
It's a brilliant idea.
Brought this up yesterday. So.
You know, and just all the cues for all the science fiction that came after.
Oh, yeah.
Metropolis is a, you know, required viewing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's on YouTube. If you want to pre-watch, but you can also save it for the night. Mm-hmm. I've been asking if anybody knows how to play the piano or the organ, so we can have
little.
But nobody yet has popped up. On we go with Windows Weekly, continuing on to antitrust, something you've all been waiting for.
It's not antitrust in Microsoft.
Aren't they being investigated in Europe? Are they not?
They are.
That's why I think this is very interesting. Yeah. So a bunch of gatekeepers have been held accountable for the DMA, the Digital Markets Act. Most of them have done what I would call a malicious to belligerent type of compliance. Apple is almost certainly the worst of the group by far.
That's interesting.
And not surprisingly, when the EU announced today they were in fact investigating those companies that are not complying, there were a lot of very Apple-specific points, which I thought was interesting, including one. I had gotten a MacBook Air a couple of weeks ago and noticed and was, you know, now I'm using the iPhone more. And I noticed a weird user interface thing regarding default browsers that only applies to Safari. And I thought it was off. And it's, you know, they touch on this, you know, like they deliberately design these UIs to confuse people and keep them on their browser, et cetera, et cetera. So I thought that was kind of interesting. But I only mention this because of those gatekeepers, Google, Meta, Amazon, Microsoft. The only one that I think, unless I'm missing one, I could be missing one, but the only one of the big guys that is not being held
immediately being investigated,
if you will, it's Microsoft, yeah. Right? And we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. They said they only have the two gatekeeper products, Windows, which is obvious, and LinkedIn, which is like, what? But whatever. And they are just complying. And not only they're complying, but they set up like a public website. They're like, we're going to come out every once in a while and document how we're complying and what we're doing and all the changes we made. And I love it. I wish you would do that for the rest of the world. But, you know, we'll talk about that too, because separate from this, Microsoft was, I guess, still being investigated in Europe for bundling Teams with Office, right? This was the Slack complaint back from when Slack was still a standalone company. And Microsoft announced this week that they're just going to debundle Teams, you know. They proposed this to the EU sometime last year, and I don't remember the exact numbers, but you as an organization would save, I want to say, $2 per user per month by not using Teams. So it's not the cost of Slack, which I think for Slack or their current owners, Salesforce, that might be a sticking point, but that was their plan. And now they've announced they're going to do what I think all these companies should do, which is do it everywhere, right? Just do it everywhere. How difficult, expensive, and convoluted would it be for any of these companies to maintain two different versions of these products, one that complies with the DMA and one that does not, out of, you know, when in fact the situation that led to Teams being so successful is not going to reverse itself, right?
Right.
You got it. You have, maybe Richard knows, 400 and something million
something like that.
Licensed customers right now. I don't think you're going to see a lot of those guys walking away from Teams. So this is a low risk concession to make, I think.
And yet compliant, and they came straight at it, right? Like,
I thought, and you know, this is the way they behaved with Activision Blizzard. They just kind of hit the thing on the head, addressed the complaints, got it done. This was the stuff that came out of, I guess it was Microsoft's second antitrust trial, the big one in Europe, where Brad Smith came in and said, guys, you need to start being nice. Like, we can't just be this way. You know, this is a message Apple has not gotten. They will. But as of today, they're acting like Microsoft was.
You can choose to learn it the hard way. All we're missing is the hours of video of Tim Cook dissing U.S. senators. And then we'd be fully
there. Just him slouched over in a chair in a dark room, like arguing over the meaning of the word the.
Right.
You know, which was a classic. I told you this, the soul-sucking nature of those, what do you call that, like the testimony that Bill Gates gave for the U.S. antitrust trial?
Oh, yeah.
Any journalist could contact WagAd at the time and get every, and it came, it was a box of
it's all
VHS
on YouTube
tapes.
Now. You
is
just
it?
Go watch it on YouTube.
I remember Dvorak.
The only thing I've watched.
He ordered the box, and he took, and he, this was back in the video toaster days. He loved his Amiga video toaster. He edited out everything except the gulps. Because apparently Bill did a lot of gulping during his testimony. And so he made like drinking, a 5-minute.
Well, he was drinking Coke the whole time.
A 5-minute video of Bill Gates going.
The only thing I've watched in my life that was more soul sucking and depressing was the time I was homesick and I watched all three Godfather movies back to back. But other than that,
those are great.
They're great movies. I'm not criticizing the movies. I'm just saying they're depressing. These are not feel good movies.
Yeah. You know, the endings are all kind of the same.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
We're going
to
the mattresses, Guido.
Yeah.
Yeah. The cannoli has a good time, but that's about it.
Yeah. My wife came home and she's like, how are you feeling? I'm like, I've been crying all day. Yeah. So, The
my boy, Sonny, my boy.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Shut anyway, Microsoft boy. Today is different than they used to be, except with Windows, right? Like, well, except with they're adhering to the DMA. They're doing a great job, but they're not doing it everywhere. And I wish that that is something they would do.
Look at
I'd
that
like
page.
To see them do that.
That is a beautiful page. Microsoft's compliance with Digital Markets Act. Welcome.
.com.
.com.
Yes. You know, but no, it's the right right way to. You're a global company. You got to exist in the world. You know, it's the right thing to do. I think.
Yeah.
So.
But so you think they're completely off the hook? I think Germany is still.
They're not doing anything. Oh no, I don't think DMA is concerned. They're making inquiries around OpenAI for obvious reasons,
right?
And I think Microsoft's positioned themselves very well on that too by engaging with Mistral and Huggy Bear and like everybody else, so that. You can just say, well, we're not specific with OpenAI. We're just, you know, supporting all of the different lines of modules we can find.
Yeah.
But, you know, the interesting thing about the Brad Smith approach is that it is a good PR play. It is making happy noises to the constituents, to the people of the EU. The actual compliance part is, you know, a separate question. Like, you've got to go take a look. What are they actually doing rather than what they're saying? Although you presume the two would line
up. What the EU has not said is that, unlike all these other companies, we're all, what do they call them? The, it's not the right term, but it's the interested parties, right? In other words, the Spotify's, the people who are complaining about these companies all have these further complaints because they should. Like what Apple's doing is ridiculous. I think even the biggest Apple fan in the world knows what they're doing is horrible, right? But no one has said that about Microsoft with the DMA compliance. Like, no one has come to the EU and said, oh, this is bullshit. You know, they're not doing it. Like, so, you know, my complaint is just that we can't get it outside of the EU. I can't afford to move to France, but I would love to have this stuff happening. So,
aim for Portugal.
And France, too. But, reloving bastard. The point is, a lot of the feel goods that I got out of Microsoft over the past decade, which I sort of attributed to Satya Nadella, right?
Yeah.
In many ways, when you think about it, might have come out of the Brad Smith mentality, right?
You might be right there. Yeah.
Right. I mean, the kinder, gentler Microsoft thing, it might literally have originated with him. In fact, I think we could make a really good argument
because he started back in the Bomber days. He was helping to clean up the DOJ crisis and get the consent decree. So, you know, we've had a decade of him more. In 2 decades.
The great story about him, I'm going to get this slide wrong maybe, but he went into the room with all, you know, the senior leadership team, and he had one slide for his presentation. It just said, settle. and that was his whole message. He's like, this is what you're doing. You can't, whatever you're doing now, it's not working.
It's not going to work.
You know,
it cannot work.
This is not going to work.
Make
settle.
A deal.
Just settle.
Yeah.
Yep. Do what they want.
If you've ever been in the room, and you probably have, I feel like Richard, you have, where your lawyers and their lawyers are sitting across the table, and you're going back and forth trying to negotiate a settlement.
Now, you read the room with the temperature. Is the room temperature's going up?
Yeah,
you take a break.
Yeah,
always. And there's always somebody who smokes.
Yeah,
and you
so that
go,
gives you the option.
You go to I don't smoke, but I have often gone out for a smoke.
Yeah,
because that conversation is worth
it does,
10
it
times
up.
Everything in the room.
Yeah. Yeah,
just break them up, feed them.
But I'm tempted to write a note that says settle.
Yeah,
just hand
that's
that.
It's where we need to be, right?
Settle.
That should be your business card. It just says settle.
Make a deal.
It's like, what is
just
this? It's like, oh, I'm a lawyer.
You don't want to go to court. That's the real
truth. Yeah. The line that I was taught long ago is winning a lawsuit is like winning an earthquake.
Yeah, that's a very accurate. Right. I've only done it once, and it was not my favorite thing.
Nobody's happy. Nobody.
You know what? This is coming around full circle. I mentioned the movie Roadhouse. That's a line from Roadhouse.
Yeah.
She said something like, do you win most of your fights? And he said, no one wins a fight.
Wow.
You know?
It's a good one.
Right?
Yeah.
Everything I need to know in
that
life.
That didn't stop
from
him
Roadhouse.
From fighting, though, as I remember.
No. So. No, the whole movie was about fighting. That's why we're here.
Still got a film to make. Goodness.
The people who won were the people watching the movie.
Yeah.
Plus, there was a monster truck. It's amazing. It's an amazing film. Anyway. What are we doing? Oh, yes. So, moving on, I guess.
Yes. Shall I? Shall you?
Yes. Shall I? Last year, Microsoft replaced a paid OneDrive tier with something called Microsoft 365 Basic. It doesn't give you any of the Microsoft 365 apps, but
so it's a great name.
It's a great name. ransomware protection, ad-free experience for Outlook, which is all the more important these days because ads are now in the new Outlook, which is that the web/native app, et cetera, et cetera. They just upgraded this offering, right? So there's ransomware detection and recovery now. There is improvements to the personal vault, which this is crazy to me, but I use personal vault pretty extensively, right? So if I get like a serial number from a company for a product, or if I have a photo of my license and my passport, put that stuff in personal vault. It apparently this tier was limited to 3 files before.
What?
Just like what?
Okay.
So now it's unlimited, like the rest of Microsoft 365. Good.
You can only have 3 important files.
Yeah. I have 3 important. Yeah, exactly.
You have it's another like bank account.
It's a picture of 2 of my 3 kids and my wife. Yeah. So it's like I just crazy. What Wait else,
Paul? You don't have 3 kids though. I just want to.
No,
make
I know.
That
I'm just
clear.
Sometimes you do. Sometimes for a joke, I have to free will
exaggerate
a little bit. I have cats. You can Microsoft 365. I'm sorry. OneDrive has its own form of sharing links, and you can now password protect and expire them with this tier. You can do that with the other ones before. You can access offline files and folders on mobile, which is maybe I guess. And it's $20 a year, so
it's kind of it's cheap. But the thing about I'm curious about is this ransomware protection.
Mm-hmm.
So it senses that there's malicious activity on your files, and
on
then
your
says,
OneDrive, yeah.
So, right. But OneDrive, these are not immutable files, so they're actually maybe being attacked as well, and that's how they know.
Well, they always keep multiple copies.
It's the versioning.
So what they're looking for is unusual simultaneous behaviors.
Yeah,
all your files are being opened in sequence. That's not what you normally do.
Right. So when they see that, you can roll back to a previous version.
They make sure there's another version locked off, and they notify you.
Yeah, so a lot of people don't know this, but many of the storage-related OneDrive features, which most of the features, I guess, are available in Windows. Versioning, like file versioning, stuff like that. But the one that isn't is there's a recycle bin, and it's basically versioning for your entire OneDrive in addition to things you've thrown out. So they do allow you to do file recovery in the event of a ransomware incident or whatever. So
that's actually for $20 a year. That might be.
Yep, it's not bad.
Worth it. It's 100 gigabytes. It's not for
plus,
big
honestly,
businesses.
Honestly, Personal Vault is big, too. I kind of downplayed it when I said it, but I use offline files and folders on desktop all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I have never, and I can't think of a reason that I would do it. But if you're someone who uses something like an iPad Pro or something, having your files offline on that device as you would on a PC or Mac, that's actually very useful, right? So,
And OneDrive will do that on an iPad?
Yeah, on a mobile device. Yeah, the mobile app. Yeah,
that's very nice.
So that's cool. I mean, that's fine. It'll do it on an iPhone too, but I mean, I just see less of a use for that. But I guess I'm sure someone could come up with a reason. Sounds good to me.
If you want more space, you can always upgrade.
That's obviously the plan.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. There are 2 things I'd like. These are semi-related. I would like to see Microsoft have storage tiers that weren't tied to Office. Like, in other words, like this thing, but a terabyte or 2 terabytes.
Just sell me a terabyte,
whatever.
Yeah.
Just the storage, I think, would be cool. And then semi-related to this in the Apple space, there's like iCloud, obviously. iCloud goes from 200 gigabytes, which is enough for a couple of devices to be backed up, to 2 terabytes is the next tier. It's like, guys, I have 2 kids with iPhones and iPads and me, and we are right on that line.
Yeah, we need about 300.
I don't need 2 terabytes, and I certainly don't want to pay for that, but 1 terabyte?
Mm.
Or something, anything in the middle, something would be great. So Apple is always going to be for advice. I'm surprised they haven't asked. But anyway, that would be nice. And I think it would benefit a lot of people. I think a lot of people would like that.
All right.
I considered making this the top story.
Yeah,
because
I was
going to
ask you why you buried this one, because it's certainly a storm
in my
world.
This may be one of the biggest stories of this year. And I know it's just, beginning of April, but...
Yeah.
Randomly and coincidentally,
totally lucky.
A Microsoft engineer who was working on benchmarking a Debian distribution in a virtual machine, who's not a security guy, wasn't looking at source code, nothing like that, discovered some anomalies in the performance, tied them to a set of
one half compression of utilities. 1 second.
This is why you think, this is why OCD is good in our
thank
business.
Thank you.
Because no one else cares about 500 millisecond yep. latency.
One yep. half and he's second. Like, no, that ain't right.
In your SSH.
You know, most people would have been like, eh, whatever.
Well, yeah, it can't be.
He just reported it. This was a, these were, what's it called? Like XY or whatever the
XC.
Utility.
XC.
The,
yeah.
XC. XC.
It's a compression the, utility you don't really out. See.
No.
It doesn't usually have a user facing.
It is a perfect supply chain attack.
Yeah, it's a really good
so here's, this is, there's so much about the story that's astonishing, but this would have gone out to every, basically every stable Linux distribution
yep.
in the world. And it could have been one of the biggest technology disasters of all time. But the thing that blows my mind the most, like literally, is that the individual, or probably nation state, right, that was responsible for this,
I think it's a
was playing
state.
The long game.
2 years.
They invented a, 2.5 years, I think it was, of a like a pretend persona who ingratiated himself into this community, started making contributions, started to be trusted, and then just became part of it, and then he unleashed hell. And it would have gone out to the planet,
yep.
except this guy randomly found it. And it yeah. that is, I this is, this story is still unfolding. There's still much more information, I think, that will come out of it, much like the Microsoft, you know, hack thing from a couple of months ago, whatever. But this is, it's just awesome. It, but it's also scary because now, of course, where your brand goes is, oh, crap, now we know anyone could do this. Mm. I mean, well, you know, it's not a random kid. No kid's going to do this for no. over 2 years. But the fact that someone played that game for that long and was successful suggests to me, and probably to others, that like, there are other people could be doing this yeah. or other whatever.
Well, I mean, the open source side is one thing because, of course, code was visible. So once you scrutinized, you found it right away.
Visible but obfuscated.
The
he,
real
he tried to hide yeah, it.
They did, really, yeah. they did a good job yeah, of it, too. It's yeah. very tricky to find. And I think that's what actually twigged him was when he went looking for why is this is delayed. He couldn't see yeah. anything and it yeah. was just too clever. Then, he, you know, the hair stood up on the back of his neck. Like, that's strange. Yeah. I better call somebody. What about, I mean, a classic, the real sort of mole approach, become a Microsoft right. employee. Spend two yep. years until you're contributing to it.
Yeah, you know, card keying your way in
something
and out of building.
Inside of Azure.
Yep.
Kevin King, do it you have anything like a, you want to tell us,
like
my
movie.
Friend? You came to us.
Was it 2 years ago?
2 years ago
you
with no
bastard.
History. No,
I'm sorry,
no track
my
record.
Repository has been disabled.
Actually, I found XC on my Mac. A lot of people with Homebrew would have it installed
yep.
because it's a utility.
It's just a question of whether
SSH.
It was going to be updated.
And there is a fix that downgraded it to the old version. So right. that, but you may have it if you have WSL running on your Windows machine.
Mm-hmm.
It's because it's not something you would install, but it's something no, many
it's,
other tools.
It's in a
install.
Package. It is a proper supply chain attack,
yeah. including OpenSSH.
He might have literally saved the world. This is incredible, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, Andreas Freund, who is a German Microsoft employee, mm-hmm. do we know what he does?
Yeah, he works on Debian.
Yeah. Oh, for Microsoft.
Like,
okay.
This is the thing. You know, it's hard to explain. I don't actually know what he does, but think about how big Microsoft is. Think about how much Linux is happening up in Azure.
Yep.
It's probably related to that. It to a lot of people who think about Microsoft from the outside, it's not what we think of when we think of Microsoft.
No.
But of course, they have these people, right?
Well.
And listen, if this doesn't fix Microsoft's reputation with the open source community, nothing will.
Mm.
If this doesn't do it, I mean, what do we have? What could you do to solve this problem?
I do like it that so he founded. He says he found an obfuscated script which was executed at the end of a configure, mm-hmm. But he was able to unobfuscate it. And one of the things it does is it copies a file called bad3corrupt LZMA2. So you know, jeez. Okay, just a little tip to hackers.
Right.
Don't, better name.
No. Yeah, there's actually
I appreciate
more, that
your
was
stamina,
a long time
maybe
existing
a little more
file.
Detail orientation.
That file, oh, because it's a test file.
LZMA
test file.
That's right.
So it isn't from the bad guy.
No, well, it was from the bad guy. The bad guy modified an existing test file, so you would ignore it. It had always been there.
Wow.
No, this, there There are many levels of clever here.
Steve Gibson did a whole half hour on it yesterday.
It deserves every minute.
I think it's a novel.
He touches on it again in the future. Yeah. I think we're going to learn a lot more. Yeah.
Well, we've been talking about supply chain attacks on security now for years. I mean, this has been a problem. There were a bunch last week on NPM and PyPI. And it just happens a lot.
On .NET Rocks, we talk about the sort of corporatization of open source, where all the big players are now there, and there's a lot of paid employees working in open source as well, and the effect that has on the community as a whole. But one of the things you talk about is this burnout of the maintainers.
That was the real problem with the XE, which is it was one guy.
Yep.
He had some mental health issues. He wanted to get out of it.
Yeah. And along came this perfect solution. Right.
Amazing. Yeah.
And it's like the scene in The Omen where the nanny shows up and they're like, we didn't call a nanny. And it's like, no, the agency sent me. It's all good. And then 2 years go by. The kid's fine.
The agency, as in the devil.
Yeah. You know, it's the same. It's this classic scenario. Yeah.
Was it perhaps Satan?
Yeah, exactly. It's all for you, Damien.
What a great movie, by the way. Yeah. I love that movie. All right, what else we got? LinkedIn isn't just getting games. It's getting TikTok-style videos.
Oh, boy.
The TikTokification of the world continues.
God, kill me. I can't.
Your resume in 15 seconds.
But you know what? Is it just wannabe TikTok, or is it really there's some utility there?
I mean, there's generally been a motion towards LinkedIn as more of a social media site.
Truly.
Yeah. You know, where once upon a time it was just a digital resume. I'm not saying that I'm excited about it, but you could see that just because of the destruction of what used to be Twitter and the, you know, pull away from Facebook and others. So this one's a bit more credible. Do I think 15-second videos are going to make it better?
They can be longer than that.
I can tell you that 15 seconds is about all the patience I have for LinkedIn every time I visit it.
15 seconds is quick enough you don't have time to skip away from it before it's over. So you were a full
I don't
watch.
Know of another social network that allows a business to buy an ad that then triggers a message to me from that business as if it were them messaging me.
Yeah.
If I paid for this, would that go away? Like, what's the business model here?
What's the $5 a month to make this crap go away?
It's so weird.
It was such a good feeling. The day I realized, you know, I'm never going to look for a job again. I do not need a LinkedIn account.
No, I'm more not employable. I wouldn't hire me. I'm kind of a pain.
I mean, I don't need a business network. I don't need
I don't. For me, it's not about hiring or getting hired. It's about just being able to, like, do things like look up people from Microsoft and see what their history is.
It is actually very useful for that.
It's a great source of guests.
Yeah, it works. It's good for that.
That's a good point, yeah.
But, man, you got to wade through some real crap to get to that. It's really bad.
Now you have TikTok-like videos. Mm. You know, I think a lot of this is also because TikTok may be disappearing.
Yes.
And
it's good to be positioned.
Yeah. Hey, kids, come on, join LinkedIn.
Microsoft was going to help before with TikTok, remember? Maybe this is them doing it again.
You know, a few times a year I go and talk to high schoolers about tech careers, and they don't know what LinkedIn is.
Yeah.
They've never used it.
They probably... Yeah. Are rapidly coming to the point where they don't know our Facebook.
Well, I talked to their career counselors about, you know, employers kind of look at your LinkedIn profile, like, not a bad idea to walk them through how to make one.
Yep.
Yep.
No, you're right. You're right. And then they can play a few games.
They'll be fine. Watch some video. Excellent.
.NET may rock, but .NET may also be end of life.
Yeah. Well, .NET 7.
This is absolutely something Richard will know a lot more about than I do, but it's weird to me how many complaints I see about this type of thing. So .NET is on an every other updating schedule, kind of like Windows Server used to be, where it would be one long-term, you know, major
every
release.
Every other LTS.
So these, now it's SDS or LTS. Mm-hmm. And .NET 7, which came out about almost a year and
November
a half ago.
November 22.
Is one of the shorter.
That long ago.
No, that's the short cycle one. The long cycle is only 3 years, which none of this is long.
If you write your code to .NET 7, do you have to rewrite it now?
No.
Okay.
No, you can upgrade.
Yeah. And normally, arguably, every time you upgrade, it's faster. Like, they've done so many performance improvements.
So they don't change the API. So, they don't change the system calls.
Well, that's so for this to make sense, it has to have gotten to the point where these upgrades are seamless and reliable and fast.
Right.
And then, of course, you get that message that Richard just said, which is true. Somehow, they continue to do double-digit performance gains every single version somehow. But
yeah, that's the
that's going to have to slow down eventually. But for now.
I don't know. Tom is a magician, truly.
But is there... I mean, you are way closer to this world. Is there a level of dissatisfaction that this maybe is a little too fast?
It's version fatigue, right? Like, you know, Microsoft committed to with what used to be called Core, and now it's just called .NET. After, as from 6 onward, that we're going to put it out every year. That it's going to be every November.
Yep.
You're going to get another version of .NET. And they've shaped their feature design around that. So often there are dark features sitting in .NET that go through several versions before they're complete. They a lot of performance tuning, a lot of incremental work. But it is a dizzying cadence. I think it's hard on everybody. But I don't feel all that different than when they were trying to do Windows quarterly, right? It's almost that same kind of madness. There was a case it was initially a race to get to feature complete and to be competitive and significant, but I think people are starting to not care.
It's almost like it's outlived its usefulness. It's like, guys, we are so impressed that you made this transition
and got to this point. Yeah,
and now slow down, please.
Yeah, it's a big breathe because it's okay.
Yeah, I think if there is an instance of a major customer of .NET that runs into problems with what should be, like I said, a seamless, fast, whatever update, I think that's when it's going to hit the fan. But
Also, all of these versions are side by side. So it isn't like the process of switching from 7 to 8 is changing a manifest, right? Like, there's not even a recompile necessarily. It's just entirely compile anyway. That's good. Right? And if it doesn't work, you flip it back to 7 and then you go try and figure out what's going on. But most of the time, you literally just switch the manifest, make sure the frameworks are in place, you're going.
There's also kind of something, this is obvious when you think it through. I mean, but to me, this is like kind of goofy that .NET 6, its predecessor, is supported till the end of the year.
Yeah, that's the LTS.
You know, which is right. I mean, that's the nature of it.
The other part of this is sort of the always be compiling mindset, that what Microsoft's really afraid of is that people get so much inertia around software that they lose the ability to rebuild it. And then they're dependent on software that eventually has a security vulnerability that they have no ability to fix. Even though the fix is made, they can't redeploy it. And so by having this constant cadence, you're keeping the deployment engines working properly so you can cope with fixes to security. Not that there's been a big security issue with the modern versions of .NET. It's really been great.
Right.
I mean, knock on wood. Yeah. We're just lucky. But, so far, so good.
That's why .NET rocks, my friends.
Mm. Yeah. But, if you want, if you're talking about it, is there fatigue? Yep, there's fatigue. 8 adoption was slow. Mm. Because people are like, really? Again?
This is why I use a programming language that was the spec was finished in 1994, and many of my libraries are 5, 10 years old.
It's not old. It's not retired.
It's finished.
It's done.
Right? It's finished.
It's correct. So it's good. So I mean, you're reading it. You're reading the room right, Paul. Like, people do feel like it's aggressive, but we don't have a better answer.
Especially with something that is internet facing, right? That's the problem.
Yeah.
Security is really. It's one thing for a Lisp to be old, but something that is designed to be out on the network.
And I would also argue, like, this whole performance improvement things, like the MPower stats change every day. There's a lot of groups of folks that are putting together their favorite bits to make the fastest websites and so forth. And Microsoft wants to play, and they consistently stay in the top 10, but only because they keep pushing the envelope.
And as Hazelnut's saying in our Discord, it's not, I mean, other Angular is 6 months, right?
But that's strictly JavaScript, right? It's like there's no deploy involved in that.
That's right.
It's just up, but exactly. Actually, a lot of .NET is probably technically up.
It is, but it's in a,
right? I mean,
but it should be in a CI/CD pipeline, right? So what it's really saying is you're not hand deploying this stuff, right?
You do a rebuild.
Well, what you're doing is you're modifying a manifest that you then push to GitHub, that kicks off a GitHub action that runs through a pipeline and deploys it. And if that's broken, then you've got bad big problems.
Yeah, you don't want to be maintaining that gold.
But now, I would argue the same thing is true with Angular, that you change up the version of Angular and you do the PR and same thing. A pipeline kicks off and maybe goes through Terraform. You know, you do you. But same basic issue.
Right. Well, thank God video games come out of the, you know, the womb perfect every single time. And you never have to update them. You know, they're just
This is the biggest complaint of the internet of them all. It's like there's just no reason to ship finished software anymore because it costs you nothing to ship an update.
Let your users beta test.
Test
it.
This for me.
Yeah.
First, pay me $80. Test this for me.
Right.
And maybe I'll slip you a fix for it, but we'll call it a DLC and pay me another $30.
Oh, if it's on Xbox, I can guarantee you there'll be a fix. It'll be a day one fix and it'll be 156 gigabytes.
Oh, yeah.
Have
massive.
Fun.
Oh, yeah. Massive every time. Oh, yeah. Then there'll be a fix of the fix and it's another 160 gigabytes.
Yeah. That's right.
A massive list. You must have written this on April 1st.
He's lying.
Of Activision games are coming to Game Pass. It's time for the Xbox segments, boys and girls. A massive list?
No, I was kidding. we've waited for several months to see what happens with Activision Blizzard on Game Pass. Last week,
Diablo.
They shipped the first game.
Yeah.
Right?
Very exciting.
Diablo 4. Very exciting. So you're thinking, okay.
I got
this email from Microsoft. Here comes the next batch. This is going to be awesome. No Activision Blizzard games.
Harold Halibut.
There's no Activision games.
The only game I don't care about any of these games, but Lego 2K Drive, maybe EA Sports PGA Tour. Yep, maybe. Shadow of the Tomb Raider Definitive Edition. Maybe.
Little Gator game?
Honestly, the only interesting thing happening to Game Pass this week is if you're paying for Ultimate, you can get 3 months free of YouTube Premium.
Oh, my.
This is like, I don't know.
Talk about paying your $5 a month not to be annoyed.
YouTube Premium is probably the last subscription I would get rid of. I would get rid of online storage before I go.
Yeah, giving away 3 months of it with your Gold Pass is really brilliant because once you've had three months of YouTube not nagging you,
I know you
won't be able to give it up.
They just, I believe, raised the price of YouTube Premium.
Did they? Fantastic.
I bought it when it was
quite
YouTube
a bit,
Red.
As I remember. Was it Red?
It used to be called Red.
Oh, yeah, it was Red.
Back in the day.
They just
used to be able to buy YouTube Music Premium and pay less, but still get YouTube Premium. They figured that one out eventually, so now it's the same.
Yeah. I think they raised it a lot. I might be wrong.
Please don't look. I don't want to know what that is. That's not.
Yeah, because we're just paying it automatically. We don't even know. We can't give it.
I know. I don't even.
Individual
don't
$14 a month. Family $23 a month.
Yeah.
Student $8 a month.
Yeah.
All right.
Yep. Whatever. Just like one. Like I told you about the iCloud thing. It's like if this is what pushes me to some iCloud tier where I get like Apple Music and blah blah whatever they call that stuff. What do you call it? Apple One or something? Kids just kill me. I can't. Can't even imagine what that looks like.
But wait, is there Copilot coming to Xbox? I'm so excited.
This is amazing to me.
Are you sure you wouldn't call it Cortana?
This is so beautiful. Microsoft is testing an Xbox virtual agent, an internal prototype of an animated character that can query Xbox support with voice or text.
His name is Cortana.
Huh. What does that sound like? Like a personal assistant kind of a thing? If only they had a name for such a product.
Of course.
That's crazy.
I love
You're
it.
You're telling me, and what message does this send to women that this thing was an AI-powered assistant in a game, became an AI-powered assistant on your phone briefly, and now we're going to turn her, now she's ending a career.
They're not actually calling it Cortana,
Xbox support. Like, that's what's happened here? terrible.
That was always the problem with the Cortana name, was it was associated with a video game with what was a digitally scantily clad woman, right?
Yeah, who, by the way, in later versions of the game went insane and became the villain.
You can't use the name. You can't.
You know, like a real woman. No. So, I mean, this is what I'm saying. It's dicey. And one of the problems, all these things, think about it. Siri, Alexa. We've moved into a world where you can change the voices and you can get men in there and all that kind of stuff. But this says so much about our industry. So anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to turn that off onto a weird sidetrack there. But, so I think you can expect to see Jen Taylor coming back and we're going to be getting Cortana. And now she's going to be
answering. Are they really saying they're going to do that? They're not really going to do
that. No, they're not saying that. No, but it's all, you know, but no, but your call is important to us. You're going to be like, this voice is familiar.
Am I calling your Xbox? Is that what's happening?
Yeah, no. I don't know. Okay. It makes me nervous. Okay, so Phil Spencer, head of Xbox, he's been talking the right talk. He's got that kind of Brad Smith mentality. He's open to everything. He's a gamer, blah, 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 whatever. He's starting to jump the shark a little bit. Oh. He's talking about opening the Xbox to rival game stores, which is not a strategy Microsoft has, and no one's really considering this. But I think he's just, you know, again, he's open to everything. He's a gamer first, you know, blah, blah, blah.
It's sort of a pitch Windows me does move, it. Right?
This is not how the world works.
Yeah.
You know, when people ask me, well, you know, you complain about Apple and 30% fees and blah, 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 whatever. If that's illegal or if that's problematic, why is it that Sony and Microsoft can do exactly the same thing in the video game space? And like, what makes that okay? And it's like, what makes it okay is those companies lose money on hardware. Mm. And that's the business model. They don't make 46% margins on hardware and then overcharge you.
Would you
for
like
fees.
An $800 PS5?
Yeah, it's right. It's built into the price of the system. That's the, you know, it's a different model. If you open up your this closed, you know, walled garden platform to third-party stores, that doesn't work.
Yeah.
Right? Not in this system, not when you're subsidizing the hardware or yes, with the software, right? So anyway, I appreciate where he's coming from. I love the guy. I think it's maybe time to rein it in and let's get realistic here. You got Activision Blizzard. You can stop overcompensating. We got it. It's good. You know, don't worry about it. This is not as monumental as Microsoft buying Activision Blizzard, but Take-Two acquired their longtime partner Gearbox for $460 million, which is interesting because Gearbox was sold to, I forgot the name of the company, another company a couple of years ago for like $1 billion plus, right? Why, Leo, on earth did you paste that into Discord? What? Why?
Just to make you unhappy.
What is that? That's not a price increase. That's like you're paying for two.
That's 50% more, what? I think. Yeah.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
How could that be?
It can't be.
It totally derailed.
It couldn't be. Couldn't be.
God, why? Stop it. I'm going to turn off that display now.
Damn it. I didn't think you were looking. Okay, sorry. I'm sorry.
Talked about things that animate on the side and you get distracted and...
That's
this
the
horrible white screen.
Yeah,
came
that's
up.
The Apple price, $18.99.
Oh, okay. That's okay.
And
okay,
but you know what? I pay for YouTube Premium Family, which gives you music and YouTube.
Yeah,
that's $30 a month, which means Apple's making $10 a month on it.
I know. That's no wonder those two companies love each other secretly.
Actually,
the Romeo and Juliet of the tech industry.
It's, you know, 15%.
No, actually, that money goes away from Google, technically, I guess. Anyway, so whatever. Take-Two is the company that makes Grand Theft. Gearbox and Take-Two had partnered for years on every installment of the Borderlands franchise games. They're going to keep making those. And they're very vague, but there's sequels to Borderlands and Homeworld coming. And then some other, like a new title. It's supposed to be pretty good. Anyway, these companies are mostly combining and...
Well, Gearbox owns Duke Nukem, man. Like, that's...
Duke Nukem. That's what I say.
Is Duke Nukem still around?
No.
There's no current...
Well,
the last one was Duke Nukem Forever, which took forever to come out.
I came here to kick ass and chew gum. And I'm all out of gum.
The last time that game was entertaining was 1994.
But it was entertaining. It was entertaining.
It was fantastic.
It was the best LAN party game ever, man.
Yep.
You know, pipe bombs and tripwires, my favorite thing in the world.
Oh, man.
Pipe bombs and tripwires.
What fun.
It's great. Anyway, Duke Nukem Forever was a steaming pile of terribleness, so that was a terrible game.
No.
But, you know, I think Duke Nukem in the Grand Theft Auto universe is a possibility. You know, there's a lot of crossover stuff, like Minecraft does this a lot.
Yeah.
I think there are others.
It's fun.
It's not just Microsoft consolidating the gaming industry. The gaming industry is consolidating.
Yeah, this was going to happen anyway. Mm. And then there were rumors of this, God, I think as long as 2 years ago, but that Microsoft would come up with not just a white version of the Xbox Series X, which is the higher end version of the console, but also a diskless version, which you want to be careful saying, meaning it doesn't have the optical drive.
Which of course uses optical drives anymore?
Right. So you can get it for less. That makes some sense. There are now pictures of it. This doesn't necessarily mean the pictures are new and that it's, you know, it's coming, but people seem to believe that we are going to see this thing, you know, coming later this year.
The black rectangle is kind of attractive. The white one is not. You should.
Oh, I actually like the white one. Yeah. Oh, the white. I'm sorry. Sorry. I like the yes. I'm sorry. You're right. I agree with you. In the bigger refrigerator style.
Yeah.
The white one just doesn't look right.
No, yeah, no. In black, it's okay. Like, because the edges aren't so apparent. But in white, you're like, wow, that is a refrigerator.
Yeah. Unfortunately, though, there were a series of leaks, remember last year, where these, the not next gen consoles, but the next versions of these consoles leaked. And the Xbox Series X refresh that leaked was a canister. So more of a trash can than a refrigerator. But I thought that
trash cans
shape
cute.
Looked nice.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
I like it. Looks like a little droid from Star Wars or something. It's nice.
It's good enough for R2. It's good enough for me.
Took the box out of Xbox.
They took the box out of Xbox.
That's legit.
It's an X cylinder.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, that's true. It's been a while since we've had an X shaped Xbox. But actually, with the exception, no, that's not true. Yeah, no, actually, with the exception of Xbox 360, they've all been kind of a box, haven't they?
Yes.
Like a rectangular carton or whatever.
It had curved, you know, corners.
Yeah. Well, that one was curvy, but other than that, every other Xbox has actually been
a box.
An actual box.
Sometimes it was a box with a red flashing light on it that made everybody sad.
Was round. That flashing ring was round. Yeah.
I'm so old I can't remember things properly, but I sent back, I want to say, 5 Xboxes 8 times.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Which means that at least 2 of them were sent back twice. And if I'm not mistaken, 1 of them was sent back 3 times.
Nice.
We talked about it back in the day. I remember you saying
I don't remember that. Maybe I'm off on the numbers. I'm not trying to exaggerate. But it was incredible
the
how often
ring
I had to
of
get
death.
These things fixed.
Yeah, there it is.
Yep.
That's one way to spend a lot of money.
Well, no, it was free fixes, but it was just annoying.
No, it spent a lot of money for Microsoft.
It was a
multi-billion-dollar right now. You didn't want to be without it. You know, what if you couldn't play your games?
Yeah. It's annoying for everyone concerned.
Yep. No, that was a bad year.
Back then, though, you could pop off the storage. It was nice. So if you had a second one, you could just pop the hard drive on and get to
but they, you know, and get they, to work. Many of them, they just turned into refurb units.
Right.
And then there were so many refurb units.
Getting returned.
Yeah. That they became giveaway gifts. Oh, I believe God. I was given at least 3 of them.
Wow.
And just sort of distributed them out. Like,
sure.
It's this like is the like old
when they
saying,
used to sell Surface RT at like, events. Yeah. It would basically be like, it's $100. Just take it.
Yeah, please. No.
You know,
so, I'll pay you $100. Take it.
just remember.
I'm just going to put some in the back of the car. Yeah. If you don't want them, it's cool. But I'm just going to, I'll leave them there.
Make this go away.
It's just, you know, just, yeah, get it off the show floor.
Yeah.
There is in some Midwestern states a celebratory day called the Leave a Zucchini on Your Neighbor's Porch Day.
Ah, it's a good day.
We could have Leave an Xbox on Your Neighbor's porch Day.
Yeah, yeah. It's better than a burning bag of dog crap.
Yeah.
Barely.
The real problem in Ohio and other states where there's really, you know, the zucchinis get big is you might leave one on your neighbor's porch, but they're going to leave one on your porch. Yeah, yeah. So there's no net.
Yeah. Everybody's got too much zucchini.
Everybody's got too much zucchini.
The correct amount of zucchini is no zucchini.
Oh, I like zucchini. So
this is probably a lot of places, right? But in the Northeast United States, that problem, we have that problem with tomatoes in the summer,
right?
It is the greatest thing on earth to holy God.
Please save me.
More tomatoes.
Yeah. It's so bad here that my wife and I, when we lived in that apartment in Macungie, were walking each morning, and this guy we had never seen or met before came out and said, "Can I please give you guys a bag of tomatoes?"
Please.
And we were like,
"So okay." In my neighborhood, I have the big box smoker, and it was an Italian family that lived across the street. We recently moved in, found out I had a smoker, and it's like, "Would you mind if we smoke some tomatoes?" I'm like, "No, fine." So we sat and drank wine and smoked tomatoes. Oh. They brought over 200 pounds of tomatoes. We smoked tomatoes.
Oh God!
Do you get high when you smoke tomatoes?
I mean, only if you inhale.
Okay,
right? Like, you got to really
don't inhale when you're smoking tomatoes. That's sure.
But drinking with an Italian family,
tomatoes. They made salsa.
They were making sauce,
but
they wanted
sauce. Yeah, you just.
That's good sauce.
Yeah, they brought their own oak. I loaded up the smoker. Before, right? We'd roast them until they blistered, and then they would put them through the mill, and we were just filling the racks.
That's some good
over
sauce.
Over and over again with, I got a few jars of that.
That's probably why God invented tomato sauce.
Totally.
Because of the overproduction of tomatoes.
That's how he invented whiskey, too. Yeah. It's like, we got too much barley. What are we going to do with the barley?
What are we going to do? Right. We got whiskey coming up. We got our tip of the week, our app pick of the week, and a Runners Radio as well. It's all just around the corner with the back of the book, Richard Campbell. So nice to have you in studio.
It's really fun to be here.
Yeah, I really like having you here. And, of course, lunch is waiting for us. You can probably smell it.
Good
but
things.
We can't eat good while things. We're in studio.
Tomato sauce?
Yeah. I think it's Italian.
Yeah, it is. It's definitely tomato sauce.
It's definitely some tomato sauce.
Paul Thurrott, he has a bag of tomatoes he's willing to give you.
Please take them.
Please.
You're a bag of tomatoes.
He's at Thurrott.com, and you're listening to Windows Weekly. Tip of the week, Mr. P.
So I mentioned last week, I think it was, when I went back and looked at Windows 10 again, and I was like, yeah, most of this I can live without. But the one thing that really stuck in my craw a little bit was the File Explorer thing.
How crisp and clean
it is. So I started looking around.
Yeah.
Yeah, like it actually works and stuff. So one thing, does it do
file copying? Because that would be awesome.
Yeah, it does. It copies files and everything. It's fantastic.
Oh, my God.
So if you are in Windows 11 now, you get the new File Explorer, obviously. If you can open Control Panel and hit the up arrow in the toolbar, and it goes to the old File Explorer. File Explorer is still hidden in Windows 11.
Oh, Jesus.
So that made me think, okay, hold on a second. A lot of these taskbar start menu replacements are based on the fact that old code is still available in Windows, and that's what they're using to resurface this stuff. There must be a way to resurface the old File Explorer. Mm-hmm. And there is. There's a utility. It's free. It's on GitHub called Explorer Patcher. It's all one word. It also does things for the start menu and taskbar and probably some other things. But I've just played with it with File Explorer.
Wow.
And you can go back to the previous version of the Windows 11 File Explorer before they, you know, WinApp SDK'd the hell out of it. You can go to the Windows 10 version, which is the one I like. And then you can also go back to the Windows 7 version, which is a real blast from the past.
Oh, man.
It's got some Vista era UIs in there. It's neat. So if this is a literal concern for you, this might not be a bad thing to try. I mean, it's
look, you got a little pig in your search, Pill. Or is that a hippo?
That's a tapir.
Oh, a taper. Okay.
A taper, whatever it's called.
Them's good eating.
Yeah, a little. You got to pluck the hairs.
Smoke
out.
Them a bit.
Like smoke them.
That's the key. Yeah.
This is a cool app. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah. So that's just, you know, it's a little
amazing.
Tip. You know, it's possible if you want to. And then for apps, I have. I just want to mention Arc again. I've been using it on the Mac. It is, God, dear God,
change your life.
Sometime this year, they promise they're going to bring the Windows 1 up to speed, and apparently the mobile version, although that thing today is not even a browser.
Well, it's different, but I like it. It's what taught me that AI is a better way of searching. Arc search on the iPhone.
I don't know if you saw this. The mobile version, like one of the kind of predatory complaints against that is it doesn't bring you to site where the...
Yeah, I don't have to read Thurrott.com anymore.
They've updated it, and the way they present it, in kind of a good PR way, is we heard from our users that sometimes I want to go just to the original sites. We made that really easy now. So actually they're making that easier than used to be the case.
Yeah, because it did kind of disintermediate the websites.
Yeah.
But now it's like a regular search engine. But if you do the browse for me, let me see if it... Oh, yeah, see, they did. Yeah, they added that carousel. That, Yeah, they added the carousel because normally.
So I think this was to address not complaints from users really, but I bet it was complaints from competitors
or the websites. You know, the sites that they're...
Don't scrape us, please.
Snippeting. Yeah.
Or at least, you know, give us attribution.
I love
way
this,
to get
though.
There.
I turned Lisa onto it, and I wasn't sure if she would go for it. Mm-hmm. It completely replaces my Safari now.
It's really
use this for everything. Yeah. It's really fantastic.
I love it. Oh, here's my there's one Achilles heel for this thing to me. I've adapted to all the navigation, the way things work. I have multiple spaces. You know, I really like the thing. The only problem with it is that Control Tab, which is how you move between the tabs in any browser, right?
Yeah,
is limited to the five, I think, or six most recent tabs only. But it doesn't matter how many tabs are kind of like open, although its notion of open tabs is also a little different. In the browsers that I've used to date, it's almost always just in the order of the tabs, right?
Right.
I think Safari will let you do it in the order of most recent. But it's always all of the tabs. I for a power user product like this to be that limited is curious to me, and I feel like they'll probably fix that eventually.
It's funny, I didn't even know or notice, because I almost always want to go to the last page of the, you know, several. I don't usually want to go
that far back.
Yeah,
a lot of people wouldn't. But so see, I didn't even notice. My thing, though, is my default browsing set in any browser is, on most browsers, I pin four sites, and then I have this set of things that are related to my website, the comments, to news, and news readers, and things like that. So I want these things open everywhere. I want to be able to switch between them. I'm very keyboard oriented. Like if you just had the sidebar open and we're going to click on them, you probably wouldn't notice that either, right? But I
have the sidebar hide. Do you create spaces? Because I have multiple spaces.
Yeah, I do.
For news.
But that again, see, that's the thing.
That's down here.
The Mac, that makes much more sense.
Yeah.
Because the Mac has tremendous trackpad gestures.
Right.
Windows does too. I know. But it really does work better and it feels more natural somehow on the Mac. So switching between things on the Mac, to me, in Arc, to me is more, it's just, you can tell it was designed for the Mac.
It's like Mac.
You can just tell it was. Yeah.
Which makes me sad. I'm on a Linux box right now. I can't use it. I end up using Firefox on Windows and Linux and Arc on the Mac. And now you really It's hard. It's like having feet in two different centuries.
If you ever want to be convinced, the way you get convinced not to use Firefox is to use it on iOS. Because it's ridiculous. If you're using Android, you can. Firefox supports extensions now. Like,
yeah,
it's actually kind of awesome.
Yeah, but that's Apple. So
it depends on the system.
Yeah.
And then just real quick, I of course because I'm me, this is a classic thing for like you don't trip into it like a hole. You fall into it like with your entire body. Like on Monday, I wrote an article about how I spent months trying to replace this mobile app called Artifact.
Love perfect Artifact. Yep. So sad about it.
Never found anything even close. And I'm like, you know, but then they kept it going. I'm like, you know what? Screw it. It's fine. The next day they announced they had sold it to Yahoo.
Ah!
And Yahoo's killing it. And oh, are you kidding me?
What is it Yahoo does?
I didn't even know Yahoo was around. Yeah.
I'll tell you what Yahoo does. The same thing a snowball does when it's rolling down a hill that never ends. It just keeps going. It's like the Terminator robot of stupid. I think it's just that for people. I don't know. Who uses Yahoo? Don't answer that question, by the way. Because who cares?
Yeah.
Yahoo should not exist. They're like a vestigial limb from the 90s or something.
We used to have tickets Levi's Stadium, where the Niners play, in the Yahoo section.
Wow.
And of course. Had to go up a purple escalator, right?
And I remember a Yahoo billboard in
that beautiful, the best billboard in San Francisco Yahoo billboard. Right. So you'd go up the escalator, and every 5 feet or so go, Yahoo! It was the most annoying.
And you're like, this company's never going away. And as it turns out, you were right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. Well, this was only a few years ago. It was crazy.
I've done everything I can. If you are on Android, you're screwed. There's nothing. Flipboard's okay. All the big ones stink.
There's nothing as good.
You're on iOS. You have a couple of good choices. I use something called Feed, which is like Feed with four E's. It's actually very good. It's not as good as Artifact, but what is Bulletin? Pretty good. But I can't find anything on Android that matches this. It's killing me.
Who owns Yahoo? I mean,
the shareholders.
The Chinese, they own
10%
Opera
Verizon
and Volvo and Yahoo.
It's 10% Verizon, which should tell you something. Yeah. 90% Apollo Global Management.
Wow.
Sure. Which is private equity, which means, not good.
They're just riding it out, you know?
It's Leon Black.
They're just,
I must whatever. Still be making enough Yahoo. Money to keep it on.
Yeah, I don't even
know. What I like? Every time I go search for Alta Vista, it just takes me to the Wikipedia article, and I'm okay with that.
Right.
Right. Well, wait a minute. Axios says Yahoo sparks a renaissance under the new owners. Well, I wonder if they got bought by Apollo Global as well.
A renaissance.
A renaissance.
A renaissance in The Walking Dead.
In what
you
way?
Zombies were fake. Well, let me show you Yahoo. By the way, Microsoft once going to buy this company for, if I'm not mistaken, $46 billion.
Remember that? Right? That was going to breathe a sigh of relief when that failed.
It was going to be Ballmer's big deal, you know?
So what Apollo's doing is...
he woke up what...
Go ahead.
I was just going to, he just woke up in a cold sweat one morning. He's like, what am I doing?
What is this? What was I thinking? You know?
So Yahoo, yeah. apparently under Apollo, is that's why Artifact, they're trying to rebuild. They bought a social investing platform, Common Stock, Wager, a gaming thing last year, Factual, to add news credibility ratings.
Here's the problem. Let's say Yahoo somehow miraculously pulls it off, that their mobile app is worth it. It's the thing I loved about Artifact, and that somehow I can quickly get to a thing that is what I want, which is a tech feed. I'm not going to use it. I'm just not. I'm that obstinate. I have no respect for this company. There's no way. No way.
Maybe you will have more Yahoo respect when you hear
that they are highly
profitable with a revenue of $8 billion a year. Maybe that'll change your tune, Paul Thurrott.
Okay, so Microsoft has long claimed that MSN is highly profitable for the same reason.
Yeah, right.
And this is like saying... remember the 80s action hero, and he's really big in China now, and now he's probably making more money than he ever did. Like, yeah. Like, okay. It doesn't impact me. I don't know.
Yeah.
Not doing it.
You can't buy Yahoo stock. You have to buy Apollo's stock. But
farewell.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Damn you, Artifact.
A farewell and a hello.
My heart out.
Well, I did not have the same reaction you did. I was very sad when they got put out of business. And then when Kevin Systrom said, oh, wait a minute. Maybe we can. We fired everybody. There's only two of us.
I know.
But maybe they literally we can just continue.
I can't. That's what I'm saying. I kept using them. I thought.
No.
2 months went by. I wrote an article Monday. I'm like, you know what? Maybe they're just going to stick around. Wah, wah, wah.
That's what he meant. Nope. Maybe we can. And they're killing the app, right? Yahoo's not going to keep doing it.
They're not killing it. It's dead. They killed it immediately.
Right.
It's horrific.
So sad.
It makes me crazy.
So sad.
I read Artifact that morning and it worked fine because I used it every day. Then I sat down on my computer and I did whatever I do. My news feed came up and it said, Artifact sold to Yahoo. I'm like, what? And I went back to the app and it's like, no, we're dead.
We're dead.
Like it happened that morning. Like, wow.
It didn't even fade out. It's just gone.
Let me watch it and see what happens. Oh, yep. We've already shared a decision to wind down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're taking their AI-based aggregation technology and they're going to roll it into Yahoo News. Which.
Here's the page on
that
Artifact.
Phrase.
That's all we have for you at the moment. Wow.
Not good.
Nothing.
Not good.
This is a way to hang on to those customers. That's what this is.
Oh, my goodness.
We'll take away everything, and then maybe sometime later we'll show you something.
Well, I can't believe I still have it on my phone.
Yeah. Hadn't used it in a while, huh?
I stopped using it because I thought I'm not putting any more effort into it.
Right.
When they announced that they were going out of business. Huh. They want me to turn on notifications?
Of course they do.
Turn on notifications. Maybe something will happen. You never know.
Yeah.
As Radio, coming up this week. What you talking about?
Did an interview. This was when I was down in Australia not that long ago. I talked to George Coldham, who is a Microsoft cloud IT advocate, about what used to be called Security Copilot, but now is called Copilot for Security.
Big name change. Yeah.
They've been completely trying to different. Get the name organized. And if you recall, this is one of the very first Copilots that was announced after Satya said, hey, we're going to do Copilots everywhere. It's the kind of Copilot that really scares me because you take security. You're just going to say security? Really?
Security.
Like, what do you mean?
Yeah, it's, like, security.
Yeah, no, push the easy button and the security goes away. Yeah. It'll be fine.
That was easy.
So, and I have not been able to find very many people to talk about it, but George was the exception. And, you know, he walked me through, okay, it's a preview product. Here's where we are. You've got all these different security products at Microsoft, you know, typically in Azure. And here's a tool that helps you navigate them to figure out what your needs are.
Oh, that's good. That's a good use.
It does some good log consolidation and even helps you with the tools that are specialized in that, the SIEM-related products. So, I mean, if you check the links on the show notes, you'll see all the different products we touched on that are authentication related and data identification related and, you know, attack related, ransomware resistance, SIEM. So
to me, and it's certainly where we went with this conversation, is an awful lot of organizations out there, small shops, you know, 2 to 3 IT related folks, and nobody dedicated to security full time. It's just not feasible. And so, you know, you sort of rock, paper, scissors, who has to put on the tinfoil hat this month? And now there's a tool that you put the tinfoil hat on, and then you talk to a nice piece of software that tells you it should probably focus on next and gives you some ideas of where to go.
So it's not giving you security advice or locking stuff down. It's just helping you navigate all the different products.
And as that's well as, you know, maybe giving you a bit of a checklist. Have you checked over here? Have you looked at that? And but also can look at the security postures you have in all of these products and say, you've configured this, but you haven't configured that, and you haven't looked at this. So
does it say, thank you, citizen,
yes,
at the end?
Your compliance is appreciated. Anyway, again, a preview product. It makes me want to spend more time with it just because there is so much to look at. And they are rapidly building these connectors to Copilot for each of the different security products so that you'll have a bigger and broader view across the space. I mean, the only product like of the Copilots that scares me more than this one was the one they called Azure Copilot, because that's not too big of a bite, is it?
I think now the name change kind of makes sense, because Azure Copilot or Security Copilot, subtly different than Copilot for Azure, yeah. Copilot for
I certainly, I mean, I'm just back from the Fabric conference. I'm not even home yet. I stopped at your place
first.
Thank
you.
And they talked about, because, you know, Fabric is this data analytics tool, and the fact that you were moving through from the analytics client into the data warehouse client into the data acquisition client. And at each tier of that, there was a Copilot to help you, to help you understand the data you had, the features you had available, the capabilities you had. Like, we're starting to see this matrix of Copilots, like that there's a relationship between what you're working on and being able to have a language conversation, and, you know, a written or spoken conversation with the tool to understand what you're looking at and what capabilities you'd have, why you might want to do things there.
And it's trustworthy. There's no hallucinations.
You would hope. But, you know, he was pretty insistent on preview.
And so, double check.
Yeah. Be very careful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
I mean, in the end, you know, you are still responsible for your security. You're the one willing to tinfoil hat. So there are suggestions, but it's up to you to take it on.
This week's Run as Radio, show 926, Microsoft Copilot for Security with George Coldham.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the reasons I wanted you to come into the studio is I knew you would probably bring some fun with you.
I always bring whiskey with
me. He brings the fun.
It's a rule.
What do you got?
I got a find, no question about it. You want to grab the bottle there? We can tell the story. So, I mean, we've been going through a bit of a story arc, even with Micah, when you were off and having some fun.
My precious.
I ran across some really terrible whiskeys. There's a big wave of new whiskey companies coming up. And after having some bad experiences studying some really bad new whiskey companies, I wanted to have a good experience. And this is one of them.
It's Irish.
It's Irish.
I like Irish whiskey. It's Clonakilty.
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 You know, it's so weird. It couldn't even be a technology product name, right?
It could be.
But Clonakilty is a town in Ireland, on the very southern edge of Ireland.
On the Atlantic Ocean.
In Cork County. And they were best known for some of the best black pudding you could get anywhere. But that's changing now because of the Scully family. So the Scully family owns a barley farm outside of Clonakilty, which they've owned for arguably 200 years, 9 generations. But they didn't get into whiskey until 2016. So they are one of the new age whiskey makers, longtime family. They have some interesting ideas about how to approach whiskey a little differently. They built their facility out, was up and running by 2019, which means there's no whiskey in there from them, right? 2019 is too young.
Right.
It takes longer than that. In fact, most likely they're buying their whiskey at this point from the new Middleton distillery, which we talked about when we did the Irish episode a while back. That is the distillery that makes Jameson, Tullamore Dew, Redbreast, all of the spots, green, yellow.
Some of my favorite Irish whiskeys.
Very good whiskeys.
Yeah, yeah.
They did hire a master distiller, a fellow by the name of Paul Corbett, who worked on Teeling and Tipperary, which are both Irish whiskeys. So he kind of knows what he's doing. They do have good equipment. They've got the triple pot stills, but their big play has been to build a rack house right on the sea cliffs. So 200 feet above the Atlantic, there's this gigantic wow. rack house. And they do the pallet style. So they're using pallets with standing barrels. And so their initial releases, and I'm going to focus on the U.S. releases so you have a chance to get them. These are all going to be Middleton whiskeys. And then what they've done is they finished them at this new rack house. So maybe it's got a little hint of sea air. But consistently, you'll see the same descriptions where it is bourbon-aged, but something finished. So the double oak, which is about $50 that you can get here in the U.S., is finished in a different kind of oak barrel. The port cask, you know, spent its last year in a port barrel. These are all the things that a young distillery could do, right? They're buying six, seven, eight-year-old whiskey from the distillery, from the rack houses, which have all been aged and used bourbon casks. And then they're doing a year in their own rack house to give it a bit of its own character and start to, while they are making their own whiskey, running their stills as hard as they can and starting to rack new make. So that a few years from now, we're going to see this. So we get a chance to see Clontakilty in its transition period. They're also making a vodka and a gin because those you can make in a day, right? Like those don't need aging. So they're trying to get a bit of pipeline of income while they are letting their whiskey that they're making themselves mature.
So this is not yet from their barley field.
No.
But, it's from
not a yet.
This pretty will be darn good whiskey maker's barley field.
Yeah, I mean, I've got nothing bad to say about New Middleton. Those guys know what they're doing. What they make some very, very nice whiskey.
I like the whale tail on the label. That's
They are big on supporting sea life. They've got, they make contributions to some conservatory organizations. They talk about some stuff. Like I was reading some of the details of the way they're making their whiskey. And you know that when it comes off the still, on that third distillation, Irish whiskey tends to be very high, 87, 88, even pushing 90. And so you don't barrel it that high. It's too much of a solvent. It'll rip stuff out of the wood. It'll make everybody sad. And so you cut it with water. You'll take it down into the 60, 65 range before you put it in the barrel to start lifting some flavors from the barrel. And so they've got this idea they call gentle cut, where they're introducing water slowly to it, I guess. I mean, I don't know why the whiskey would care. But they went, you know, I study
bottles. Be gentle with my whiskey.
I study bottles pretty carefully. You see, they even put right on it.
Gentle cut. And now it's chill filtered.
Yeah. Well, non-chill filtered.
Non-chill.
That's removing the flocculation from the product, right? So, I mean, this cask number 3512 was probably that's the barrel that they got from Middleton.
Right.
And which obviously had been aged in bourbon for X number of years.
It's not cask strength, though.
Well, it's at 52.4.
Oh, it's a little high.
So that's pretty high. So I think they came out of the barrel in whatever state it was in. They threw it in a rum cask. Now, they don't specify exactly for how long, but probably a year. That's kind of typical.
It's not very dark. It's kind of a light finish.
But that also means they didn't put any caramel color in it.
Oh, I like that, frankly.
And you'll get more color if you put it in a port cask because the port imparts some color to it.
It looks like rum.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of rum-ish, isn't
it? Like a light rum, yeah.
So I hear there's some Glencairns around.
I think we could give it a shot.
So there are three whiskeys you can get in the U.S. I mentioned the double oak and also the port cask. They also have what they call a single malt Bordeaux. So they finished it in Bordeaux barrels.
Nice.
This is none of those.
What is this?
This one you cannot buy. This is what's called a private barrel select. Oh. I got this from a specialty shop, which has done the rum finish. They are partnering with a lot of other distilleries and breweries to make special editions in the U.S. to try and get introduced to the U.S. market early with these special editions before their main production starts. So they're doing all the marketing things to establish a market. But let's see what we got. Skull. So I got.
It's an Irish.
Kind of a cereally nose.
I like it.
Mm-hmm.
that's my tasting note. Oh, I like it.
It's yummy. No bite on the front.
No.
Right? Yeah. Just got it. Came in there. I almost got a bit of fruit going on, like a little pear.
Very smooth.
Yeah, very light.
Yeah.
And then a heat going down. Mm-hmm. Like when it gets down there, you're like, oh, I've drank whiskey. Not only that, but I've drank 54%. This is remarkably gentle.
Yes, yeah, surprisingly 54. Gentle for that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's quite good.
We're not prepped for this. 52.4. I would normally at this moment take a little bit of water, maybe two drops, put it in there and see what happens.
Gently.
Yeah, just to see where it goes.
Well, we can do that now because it's over.
Because the show is over. So I got...
Sorry, Paul. He looks so left out.
Clonakilty is new into the U.S. market. You can find a few bottles around. They're running in the $50 range.
It's quite good for $50. I think that's great.
Knowing that it's actually one of the new Middleton whiskeys, which are all very good, and they've done their own finishing.
Reminds me of Middleton. It definitely has that.
It has that style. Kind of little Jameson, you know, although I'd say less heat than Jameson, honestly.
It's quite good.
Tasty. As much as I always thought I'd only introduce to whiskeys that I loved. I have now brought a few to the table that I'm like, don't buy this. but this is one this is new to me.
I would keep this around. I think it's very drinkable. I would keep this in the house for anybody who came over and wanted to.
And it makes me happy that there are new whiskey makers making good new whiskey.
No kidding. And when they start actually making their own whiskey,
we'll have to see what they make.
Yeah. Very curious. Would that make a difference if they have their own barley and their own distillation?
Well, I think there's no substitute for 5 years in a barrel in their warehouse.
It's the finishing that really matters.
So the finishing makes a big difference. But the Islay's, because they're so close to the sea, consistently they talk about those sort of salty notes, those kinds of flavors, as opposed to the Highlands that are further from the sea.
Right.
This is one, most Irish warehouses aren't near the sea. This is pretty much the only one that close to the ocean. So they may have something unique.
Sea air, and it's consistent temperature probably.
It's stabler, right?
Yeah.
So they have a possibility.
Yeah.
But it's going to, we're 5 years away from knowing.
No peanut butter flavor, though, Paul. Oh, I'm sorry.
That's bad. Can't taste a chocolate anywhere.
I don't taste cinnamon. Mm-hmm. It just tastes like whiskey. Okay.
Disturbingly like whiskey. He's hung up, hasn't he? He's so annoyed with
us
now.
He's so pissed off. He says, I have nothing to do with it. That's Richard Campbell. He brings whiskey whenever he comes, and it's always nice to see you. It's been a while. You haven't been in the new studio.
Nope, it's the first time in the new studio. Last time we saw each other in person, we were on a cruise ship.
Oh, the cruise. I forgot. Yes. Where we all got COVID. That was fun.
Including my wife.
Thank you, Richard. So nice to see you. Safe trip home. Not too much of the Clonakilty before you leave. Although you can have lunch in the other room.
I appreciate that.
I think that'll help. Paul Thurrott is at Thurrott. Rich is at runasradio.com, by the way. That's where Run As Radio is, and .NET Rocks is two fabulous programs. Paul Thurrott is at Thurrott.com, Thurrottccomm. No, I think that's a little bit too much.
You'll get there.
Yeah. Thurrottgood.com. His books are at leanpub.com, including Windows Everywhere, which is a great story about the development of Windows kind of through its languages, and the field guide to Windows 11, which includes Windows 10 inside, like a little bit of a surprise filling. And he joins us, as does Richard, every week to do Windows Weekly every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC. You can watch us live, as some of you are right now, on YouTube, youtube.com/twit. We stream our shows live so that you can interact with us in the chat room and so forth. After the fact, though, you can go to this website right here, twit.tv/ww. All the shows live there. Hundreds of them. Hundreds of the shows. 875, to be exact. There's also a YouTube channel dedicated to Windows Weekly. And, of course, the best thing to do is subscribe in your favorite podcast client, and that way you'll get it automatically as soon as it's available. And if you're a club member, you can subscribe and get the ad-free version automatically. Windows Weekly in audio or in video. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Richard. Thanks to all of you, all you winners and dozers. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.